Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com, music for your mind, body, and soul.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com, music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Doc.
Big C.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is that Dusty? Oh, just us right now.
Dusty's in the wind. He's coming.
Dusty's always in the wind, always in the wings.
Yeah. But I think I see Mr. Coltrane. He just walked in.
Hey, without further ado, Mr. Coltrane, the floor belongs to you. Dear Lord, we thank you for another Sunday as we look forward toward another Monday. We thank you for the little things that we so largely take for granted. We thank you for being our God. We thank you for blessings unseen, without question undeserved, and unmatched. And we just once again ask you that you give us so much what we want, what we need. We say thank you in every possible language that we know. Thank you. Gracias. Obrigado. And bless the panel. Bless our families. Bless our friends. Bless our president. More importantly, all homage and glory to you and darling son Jesus. And we just say simply thank you and praise your holy name. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Day for the show. It is a Sunday night wrap-up. Big C, you know, I really enjoyed that show last night.
That's good. That's good. It was a cool show.
It was
different. Just being live, on location.
And you know, the thing about that, because I kept thinking Dusty was doing the heavy interrogation, and then when we did the rebroadcast this morning, you know, Mel Smith has got the Reuben cornered over there, and Sea Wings is throwing down on the lady. And I really like the way Sarah introduced her male counterpart. I mean, she did an introduction for us, and she brought him right in. And then it's just the acknowledgement of the panel. You know, their intellect, their expertise, and not only the boxing and sports, but the way they handled themselves.
Absolutely, in a different venue.
Yeah. They were impeccable. As Howard could say, you made yourself proud, young man. And it was really nice. The whole different reasons. Celino playing the organ, but he originally was a saxophone player. Bill Wirgs on the guitar, whose dad took him to a place where he saw an authentic cowboy who taught him two chords, and he started playing the guitar ever since then. The Japanese drummer who came here some decades ago, not knowing any English. And then we had Vito and his drummer live yesterday from Italy. You know what I mean? Coming up into the Bronx.
Special.
Yeah. From Italy to Little Italy and a host of other things.
Right.
And, you know, and any of these things here, you know, during the course of the show, we definitely like your interjection. And anytime you feel that we should delete Dusty, have no problem just deleting him from the program.
Are you so shocked that I was so musically intellectual? And I remember Benny Carter and I hanged out with Gloria Lynn. Are you jealous?
Listen. You were there when little David was playing the harp. Gentlemen, hang on. Larry Hardesty, introduce us, please.
Welcome to Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network. You know, Big C, look down that panel. I think we should have some Miles Davis there. Every now and then, pop a little Miles, a little jazz in for us today as we reflect on yesterday's show. Destino's always here. Yeah, that was one of the things about Destino when he first came aboard, both here, SAR from radio and whatever. Destino would get to a press conference so early that sometimes they thought he was like one of the fighters or one of the managers, but still, the attendance, you know, and that in itself put Sports In Depth there. Mel Smith Jr. is going to be joining us.
C-Wings. We're here, Doc. We're already here.
Okay, C-Wings, you get in yet?
Well.
Destino.
C-Wings.
How are we doing? No, not yet.
Okay, yeah, good. We had a nice lunch today. Looking for Lady A to join us. Mrs. Page, the wife of the late Greg Page.
Wow.
She had called earlier. I left her information to call her. She may not join us, but, you know, the panel here, we can get rocking and rolling down the line. I guess we'll try to catch you with Harold Weston. C-Wings took me to a welcome back dinner today, and up in fact, what is that young lady's name? I thought I was going to mention her name, and I got to find that paper with her name on it, and I had it name on it. Debbie, up at the Seashore Restaurant, big Jet fan. We just want to say hello to her. If this says, did I have the paper with her name on it? We were talking. No, okay. Well, C-Wings would come on. I had the paper. I had to email a copy of the show to her, but Debbie at the Seashore Restaurant up in City Island. She was a great, host, tremendous restaurant. I got a chance to watch the Miami Heat and the Celtics game. Celtics got within 10, and then the Heat just applied the heat and won. Watching Tiger Woods, Tiger was, man, he in 15, he had sort of seized control. He had an eagle, and he missed the eagle putt. And
yeah, he was terrible.
Yeah, and that there was the Masters for him. If he makes that eagle putt, he would win 11 under. And then he had another putt on the next hole, which would have been a birdie he didn't get. He'd have been 12 under. And maybe going into the clubhouse with a two-stroke lead might have put the pressure on the other guys, knowing that Tiger.
Yeah.
I mean, it was funny, but Tiger, he was minus five on the front nine and just played par golf on the back nine. Now, you know, 2-3 years ago, he would have won the Masters just playing
par. He would have eaten that up from the very beginning.
Well, not only that, I mean, there was, last year, year before, if he hadn't bogeyed, I mean, he played bogey free, but still, he was 10 under. And they were talking about yesterday, there were so many putts that just didn't go in for him yesterday. If he had one or two going yesterday, another two today, I mean, he went in. At one time, it looked 10 under was going. You were going to have like a whole bunch of guys stuck at 10 under.
Absolutely.
But the winner was at 13 under. In fact, he birdied the last hole to go 13 under. The Australian player was bidding to become the first Australian player ever to win the Masters. Tiger winning today just would have been really, really something. But I think it shows his game is back. I mean, he came up on 15 with that shot for the eagle, and when he missed that, I said, "Wow!" You know, I said that was. I was saying before he made the shot, this is the Masters. If he hits that, he goes from 9 under to 11 under with a one stroke lead, and then the next shot on 16 was a birdie, and now he's 12 under.
And
then he had another.
You know what I think, Doc? Not to interrupt. You know what I think the problem with Tiger is now, ever since all of that publicity and all of that tabloid stuff. So ever since all of that, and I had this discussion with Mike Tyson, so it's very interesting. He lost that air of invincibility panel that he's had.
Yeah.
I mean, before Tiger would step out on the woods, and guys would just automatically be like, "Oh my God!"
I think he would have got if he makes the eagle on 15, and we're talking about the eagle. If he makes the eagle on 15, and he birdies on 16, and he goes into the locker room with a two-stroke lead. I think guys are saying, "Damn, Tiger's back." You know,
yeah,
it's different.
Yeah.
I mean, because you know, then now you're trying to catch Tiger. as opposed to with the 10 under. He was 10 under, and there were so many guys that finished 10 under. But if he goes, you know, because he, as it was, he went in 10 under, but the leader was 11 under. But if he goes in with the two-strike lead, the leader is still, well, he's the leader, and the guy is one back instead of one up. I think a lot of that psychological difference comes. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake. We don't have way most of Sports Network for the show. It's 10:10 on a Sunday night. The crew is in. We're looking for Lady A. We're looking for Sea Wings. And in the background, little Miles Louis Davis, you know, when you talk culture. Last night, I spoke to one of the performers last night, and they talked about they played with Coltrane and Elvin Jones. Elvin Jones was Coltrane's drummer, but Jones, if I'm correct, Dusty, was the drummer that also played with Miles.
He played with Miles, and I think at one time he did a gig with the Count. He traveled all over, but he became, I think he became, after a while, he became a mainstay with Miles. But he played with the Count. I remember his name with the Count, and Sonny Johnson, was it, took over the drumming for the Count, and then he went on to other. But I believe he stayed with Miles. That you know, well traveled dude, he stayed with Miles, and you know, I don't know what he's doing now, but he stayed with Miles for a long time. I thought you would play Miles Davis's Fiesta de Aranjuez.
No,
to Latinize some of the jazz stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Miles,
He did that wax, man, strictly of Spanish. Oh, man, it was so beautiful, jazzed up, man.
But Miles?
Really jazz. Yeah, Miles. Fiesta de Aranjuez. If you get your hands on
that
album.
Was that on his Sketches of Spain album?
Excuse me?
Was that on his Sketches of Spain album?
I believe that was Sketches of Spain. I think
you're right.
I forgot the title, but that tune, oh, that was a monster's tune, man.
Yeah, monster tune. He did that Bill Evans he had on the piano on that particular thing. By that time, Train had left him. Train had formed his own group by then.
I'm looking at the Yankees, bottom six. Bases loaded, 1-0 Boston, man, and I think the Yankees are gonna blow it right now because it's been a well pitched game until now.
Who's pitching tonight?
CeCe, he ain't doing too good, man.
Well, he got a bad deal the other day, and when I saw that, and I remember watching that game over at the barbershop with Panama.
It was Soriano, I think.
And they bring Soriano in, and
promptly blows everything
in the eighth inning. And
yeah.
CeCe's, you know, my thing with this, and I've said this, you know, why are you taking the guy out? I mean, and CeCe kind of backed Joe in saying, well, you know, it's early part. He protects us, but, you know, the guy is pitching great ball. Give him one more inning.
He's been pitching great ball, and it's still a 1-0 game in the bottom of the sixth. He just loaded the bases. So why take him out? Now he just brought in Jova, and wow, that's goodbye Charlie, man.
Let me ask you this, Doc. My question to the panel is, when did 100 pitches get to be the plateau where everything ends? When did that become?
Well, the last 10 years. What are you talking about? Where did that become? I mean, the pitches now remind me of that classic line that Johnny United said about today's quarterbacks. You know, the way they protect them, he said they should have skirts on.
Well, that's exactly what it is. Professional pitching has become little leagues. I mean, you're limited to a certain amount of pitches, and the man is still strong.
The game against the Twins. I mean, CeCe's got a 4-0 lead, seventh inning. He's retired 17 batters in a row. Why are you taking him out?
Exactly.
Why are you taking him out? 17 batters in a row, and then you're going to talk 4 days later about the bullpen's tired. Well, you know, you could have gained the day off that CeCe was pitching.
Exactly. This is a well-pitched game. It's just that he just loaded the bases. So what? Leave the man there. Now he brings Jova. I don't know how consistent Jova's going to be. I mean, I'm looking for a grand slam of Jova's pitches, man, right now.
Well, you know, Jova
he got the top of the figure order now.
He went from a phenom to be what. But Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls, here on Sports Network. The show Tiger is back somewhat, but
yeah, but you know, I think you're right.
The aura of invisibility. Yeah. You're right.
I mean, he's lost all the shine, the aura. If all of that nonsense had stayed in the closet, he probably would have had his fifth Masters, man. But
I know something that was funny earlier that you had was also speaking of do you have an error here or what?
Okay, he got a ground ball.
Yeah, that's what he needed.
Getting back to, I mean, it's just amazing that when we walked into the restaurant, you know, Tiger hit the shot, great shot, and I can tell you, you know, the fans are so much behind him because you could see their anticipation of him making the eagle and their disappointment of him missing the eagle, and then, you know, he came, okay, we got some shots of on the internet, you know, I got Bill from yesterday. And then, you know, Gigi did a good piece on Dennis Edwards and the Temptations.
Yeah.
And we also got a shot of Bobby Womack here. You know, it's just that I look at that shot, and God has a plan for everything. And I look at how he on 15, great shot, and I'm saying, wow, he's got a shot, chance to eagle. I mean, he almost even got it closer, but that's an eagle. So now he's 11 other under instead of 10. And then he makes the other birdie. He's 12 under. And then, you know, he goes into the clubhouse with a two-shot lead. And it's it's a whole different ball game. Tiger Woods has never lost a Masters with a lead. I mean, now Tiger's back. And if he got the birdie on the last hole, because it was funny, you know, he didn't birdie nothing on the back nine. He didn't bogey.
Yeah.
He didn't birdie. He didn't birdie anything on the back nine. I mean, he was 5 under. He shot, a 67 today? And, I mean, he just, like I said, those two shots make, you know, it's the timing. He makes those shots. He's 12 under. And look on the leaderboard, Tiger Woods is leading.
Yeah.
You know?
Outright leading. Just not his time. I should know that. That's the wrong statement. It's just something that's keeping him from being the Tiger that he was in the links before the whole thing broke out. Because once you knew that Tiger was in the tournament, you said, "Uh-oh, Jesus Christ, I gotta face this dude again."
Everybody was shooting for second place.
Doc. I go back to the pre Buster Douglas Mike Tyson. I mean, I literally saw fights where they had to push guys off the stool to meet Mike in the center of the ring with water.
They kind of pushed Buster too. Buster wasn't rushing out there either.
Yeah.
Three Wings and Lady A should be joining us soon. It's a Sunday. Try to get ahead of the hoopster. We're going to take a quick little break. Big C, give us a break, and we'll come back and talk some more basketball, baseball, and possibly football on Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Don't move. Big C, it's your show now.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
What we're going to do, we've got to get a hope of the hoopster, but for the next 5 minutes, Dusty, let's do the Latin side boxing. Let's talk about last night's fight, Henry from the LDI. You know, I read it. I didn't see this in none of the daily papers.
Yeah.
But I read El Diario where, you know, Mike Teixeira donated $1 million to RBI.
He did?
Yep, and I read it in El Diario.
Oh, I got my Diario here. Oh, no, my old lady's reading it.
Okay, well, hold on. You know what?
Yeah.
Okay, talk about the fights. Let me grab that paper because I have it.
Yeah.
And I'll be back in a second, and let me get the 411.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a basic.
Now, the Morales fight, what happened with that? What are the results on that?
Well, you know, they gave Morales little slim and none because he's 34, and this guy Maidana was a hands of stone from Argentina. And he was going to clock about in one round. Let me tell you something. I gave the fight to Morales. I mean, this Morales, in the first, you know, this is why this game is such a hit and miss game. He accidentally hit Morales, Maidana, with a left uppercut. Where did he caught him? On the right eye. That right eye closed almost immediately. He looked like Hasim Rahman when he fought Holyfield. His whole right face, the eye was closed. You mean, you know, that Morales fought with one eye the whole 12 rounds and almost knocked out Maidana several times. One judge called it a draw, and they gave it to Maidana on a split decision, man. But I had Morales winning 115-113. The man was a gutsy punch taking. He got a little careless at times, but he clocked this dude, man. And now, you know, Maidana, then they talked about a rematch. Morales said he felt he won, and they want a rematch. And Maidana said, "Yeah, I'll fight him." But then the next day. And I saw the blogs on the computer. He says, "I gotta think about fighting Morales again. I want to fight somebody else. Oh, this guy's a real man, you know." So I don't know. And then the other fights, you know, like David Guerrero beat the Greek guy, Michael Cassidis, who gave Juan Manuel Marquez a hard time, you know? So that's basically what it is, you know. But hello?
Yeah, they were saying Cassidis is going to be very dangerous.
Cassidis took the fight to him, but David Guerrero was much too good for me. He wiped them out. They gave him 12 rounds out of the 12 rounds.
For sure.
And
basically a pretty good beating, but Cassidis was tough.
Yeah. Well, he's been taking some beating because Marquez beat him badly and knocked him out, and now Guerrero beat him for 12 rounds. I think he better take a little vacation.
And, yeah, you don't want to get to the point where you're taking constant beatings in this.
Yeah, well, you know, both his eyes were closed and his face was all blocked. We call it strawberry injuries. His face was all red, and so it was a pretty good fight. Then let me see who else we see. I saw Paulie Malignaggi. He's not.
Yeah, you understand. Paulie looked okay.
Yeah, well, you see, because Miguel Cotto, the older brother, is one of these no talent, hard punching dudes who surprisingly has had something like 41 fights and 24 knockouts and only 3 losses, but he just doesn't impress me. You know, as a dude who hasn't gotten out of the sparring partner mentality.
Sure, yeah. I understand what you're saying.
And because the last time he fought this dude that Golden Boy's trying to build up Canelo Alvarez, Saul Alvarez, who just won the junior middleweight title, some vacant title. And surprisingly enough, he co-promoted yesterday with Golden Boy. And he fought this Canelo Alvarez. He bounced him, he hit him. And maybe it was a different style because he went out after this Canelo Alvarez and pounded. But then all of a sudden, this guy Alvarez hits him in the eighth round, was it? Yeah, eighth round, and the referee stopped it. But
you know what they say about styles making fights. Yeah. It reminds me back in the old days with the old-timers. With Ali being as great as he was, my personal favorite, of course, and a guy who I didn't think was really that talented, Kenny Norton, used to give him fits.
Yeah, exactly. Used to give him fits. I mean, and Kenny Norton was the one that broke his jaw, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he broke his jaw, and testament to his fortitude, he fought with that broken jaw. But Kenny Norton was a real pain in the rear. He was a real eyesore. I mean, like a little pesty bug.
I mean, that crazy defense with the arms twisted and folded.
Yeah, right. That funny style of his, man.
And but, that plus he's awkward as hell.
Exactly. And that basically, that's what it is. You know, so getting back to Paulie here, of course he looked like $1 million because he had a sparring partner. To me, it was a sparring session.
A glorified sparring session, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Christino. Paulie had a punch. I mean, he was the type of person that was dangerous, not just with the jab, but had a solid right hand, a good left hook. What kind of fighter would he be? What could you make out of Paulie, does if he had that?
I would consider Paulie, he lost about 3 fights. I would feel that he would be a world champion, maybe undefeated. Because of his speed. The only breakdown of Paulie is that he cuts. He reminds me of this old-time fighter that I grew up with.
Well, he cuts, and he, like you said, he doesn't have a punch either.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, but if he had a punch.
Hmm?
No, but if he had a punch.
Okay, if he had a punch.
Yeah, if he hit Cotto, I mean, some of the most solid right hands and body punches and left hooks that I've seen, that I had never seen Paulie throw, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And he's caught him solid. And Cotto just walked through them because he can't punch. Now, like I said, if
poor man, poor man. You got to look at it as a poor man's Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, exactly. A poor man's Floyd Mayweather, because the only, like I said, the downfall that I saw is that Paulie cuts tremendously. He cuts up. It reminds me of an old-time guy that I grew up with in PAL. He became a pretty good contender, Frankie Riff. Frankie Riff, I mean, if you looked at him, he started bleeding. I mean, that's how weak his skin was, man. No, really. There was a Cuban guy, Orlando Zulueta, who was also a lightweight like Frankie Riff. I mean, Orlando couldn't punch his way out of an eggshell. But as soon as he hit Frankie Riff was slash, dash, all over the place. He had 2 or 3 operations to shave the bones on his eyebrows and so many cosmetic operations to make his skin tougher. Nothing. Every time he signed up with Orlando Zulueta, slash and dash. That's what Paulie reminds me of. The scar on his left eye, Miguel Cotto gave it to him. And every time he gets hit in the left eye, that scar opens.
Malinagi.
He fought, I forgot the 2 Africans that he fought. The 2 Africans that he fought, they hit him right on the freaking eye, boom, and he busted open. Yesterday, he busted open on the eye again. And then, to make it worse, he was cut on the right eye. I mean, the main cut was the left eye, but he was also cut on the right eye. He cuts a lot. That's probably right now the downfall that I see with Paulie, in addition to the fact that he can't punch. Now, where is he going to go from now? Because he only fought a sparring partner. I don't know. These 47 partners are no joke. I said maybe it'll make a good, interesting fight if he fights this left-hander from Boston, I think, Rico Yasso. That would make a nice fight. Underneath card, not a main event.
I look at it as also, too, I don't mean to cut you off, but...
Go ahead.
He has... Paulie Malignaggi has changed trainers. He had Billy Giles. Billy Giles was his first trainer. Billy Giles is a good, solid trainer that's underrated in New York. You don't hear too much about Billy Giles. He trained Hector Macho Camacho, or he was in the corner.
Yes.
Hector Macho Camacho, that's number one. Number two, he switched to Buddy McGirt. Now, Buddy McGirt, he brings the best out of fighters. Now, the fact is that when he switched, okay, he switched from Billy Giles to Buddy McGirt to say, then he went to another lesser-named trainer to say.
Yeah, some Marines.
Anytime these fighters truly change trainers, like Oscar De La Hoya, he has so many damn trainers. They lose style. They lose a step. Some sort of step they lose.
The thing about a trainer, and that's Steve joining us here now. So we've got Steve in the house. We've got little Kelco Mel Smith Jr., and we've got Justina Baby. Little Sea Wings will be joining us. Shirley Hoopster will get in here talking NBA basketball. WNBA draft is tomorrow. And once again, about UConn winning the NCAA championship. Trainers, I think there comes a certain point in a guy's career where he can train himself. What a trainer has to do is when you come back to the corner, Steve, you know what? Start boxing this round. You know, you're in too close. Stay away from him. He's hitting you with the left hand. Dusty, this round, start working the body.
Right.
Little Coco, you know what? What I need you to do is start throwing more right hands. Doc, you know what I mean? Keep doing what you're doing. You're doing well. Just keep throwing the jab. That's what the trainer does. Because there comes a time when you know how many miles you have to run. You know how to be in shape. I mean, it's a matter of you have the talent or not. Maybe, Billy Giles whose claim to fame is he's the guy who brought Hector Camacho along with, I can't think of the other guy's name, the Latin guy, who a lot of people at one time thought was Camacho's dad. But those are the guys who brought Hector Camacho to prominence. But, I mean, there's a great line you can say about those trainers to a certain degree. And I remember what John Condon said about Angelo. Now, what did Angelo ever teach Ray Leonard or Ali? I mean, these guys had the talent, but, you know, you had to be able to say, you know, direct them, guide them, you know, you work the body, hook the jab.
But what if you have a guy, truly, what if you have a guy like Paulie Malignaggi, who is not a great puncher, who has some skill, but he doesn't have that effectiveness to say, and who cuts? And basically, if you knocked him out or you did something to him, you probably could end him, believe it or not. You could truly end him, like Prince Nassim Hamed was ended after Marco Antonio Barrera destroyed him.
Exactly.
You know, the thing about Prince Nassim, that's amazing that you should say that, because now, the thing about Prince, I remember that fight for a couple reasons. I mean, I never thought Prince was going to win. But after Prince lost that fight, I mean, he didn't fight anymore, but what I liked about him is he, at the end of the fight, he said, I lost.
Yeah.
The guy beat me. He was a better man. I lost. And, ironically, the guy never fought again. You know, he walked
he's
away.
He's a guard. Well, but he's still a guard in England, Doc. They still remember Prince Hamed. They still have him on that pedestal. And he never fought again.
And that's very true. The English people really love Prince Nassim
Hamed.
They
love Hamed. Yeah,
but if you look at Paulie Malignaggi and he's changed trainers, and you look at De La Hoya, he's also changed a lot of trainers. There's no class between De La Hoya and Malignaggi, of course. But if you got a guy like Malignaggi changing trainers, at the end of the day, it's going to affect the fighter. So really going to help.
Malignaggi said in defense that you know, Buddy McGirt was the wrong trainer for him.
Well, you know, I disagree, Doc, because I think I feel when Buddy McGirt took over for Paulie, he gave Paulie what he is enjoying today. I believe that's what, and he did, and Buddy McGirt did the same thing for Thunder Gotti. He makes Thunder Gotti, he extended Thunder Gotti's Korean boxing
I remember what Paulie told me. He said that Buddy was the wrong. He said, you know, Buddy was the wrong guy for me. At first, I thought it was me, but then as things went on,
things, not teaching things.
Okay,
because you got to look at now the perfect prime example, exhibit A in any court of law, is when Emmanuel Stewart took over Miguel Cotto. He told us, you know, we talked to him in a long time extensively. We just chatted, but he says, "I'm not here to train him. I'm not here to give him new ideas and this, that, and the other. I'm here to bring back what made him an undefeated fighter."
Well, you know,
to
Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Network. No, what he said was that what Manny did was allow him to have fun again. Fight again. You know what I mean?
Fun and bringing back the fundamentals that he got away from.
He got away from those fundamentals because he was so busy running everything in his own camp.
Well, probably you're right. But the fact of the matter is,
what do you mean
he got him off the ropes. He got him off switching the southpaw. He got him off chucking and jiving. He got this fight with Mayorga was the test. Not so much a reforming. With Mayorga's fight was a test of the discipline. And that's another thing. The discipline that he inflicted, injected, and baptized Miguel Cotto with. Every time when he went back to the corner, it was, remember, everything starts with a jab. Hit behind him. Don't let him rattle you. Do this. Do that. In other fights, including the Pacquiao, the Margarito fight, the Shane Mosley, the Zab Judah, and every other fight, he would do his own thing, stalk people with his hands down, get stupid, switch right hand to left hand, lean on the ropes, and get pounded. This time, these two fights, this man has not done any one of those stupid things. This is what Emmanuel Stewart said he was going to deliver, and he's done. So that probably is a test of when you change a trainer to for a trainer for a teacher who's going to say, remember
this? And this is why so many people, Doc Stanley's supposed to step, Big C. Is that Miles Davis again?
I'm right here.
No, I said Big C.
Right in here.
Big C, who are we playing there?
Who are we playing there?
No, I'm going to the Yankees are finished.
I'm going
to Big C, my control board. Big C.
Grover Washington.
Who was that, Miles?
Grover Washington.
Oh, it's Grover.
Grover Washington.
Grover Washington. Very close friend.
One of my favorites.
Of Dreeser. I remember me and Larry Bird were sitting in the locker room talking, and somehow we got around to Grover. And I said, yeah. I said, you know, Julius introduced him to me, and Julius Irving. And I remember Bird said, yeah, me too. I met Grover through Julius Irving. They were close friends. He wrote a song, Let It Flow, for Dr. J. You know, ironic about Grover. When Julius had a retirement party in, it had to be April of 87, I'm thinking that. And I remember got the invitation from the Sixers, and went down there, and Grover was at the affair. Enrique McPhail, one of the fine detectives and human beings of our lifetime, was there, and he was talking to Grover. I think I told this story before. I went over, and I started introducing myself to Grover. And Max said, Grover knows who you are. Remember, just Mel. We told you about Mel, you know. And Grover laughed. We took a picture. In fact, the only picture we ever took together was ironic that we took that picture. And, you know, my association began with Grover. About a week or two later, I get a call. Myself and my lady and agent, Liz Figueroa, they wanted me to open up for Grover Washington. Actually, they said, look, we got a gig for you. As you know, I do stand-up comedy. He said, Mel, we got a gig for you, Sanford, Connecticut, next Saturday. We'll take the gig. I said, yeah, sure, I'll take the gig. Who am I opening up for? Grover Washington, Jr. And we were friends ever since the meeting at Julius Affair.
Wow.
And used to always see him. We'd always meet and talk. We'd ask about Julius, how he was doing. You know, and because his wife was his manager. She was Oriental. And the last time I saw Grover was up at the Saratoga Jazz Festival. Grover Washington, Curtis Mayfield, and Will Chamberlain, if I'm correct, all passed away. And the last year of the 20th century, December of 1999, great human being, great saxophone. I remember Mercy, Mercy Me back in the early 70s. And, you know, you never know where the good Lord's leading you. And I was just... look back at how I got the chance to meet Grover, as well as Stanley Turrentine, who I love so much, Phyllis Hyman, Gerald Albright, you know, Miles Davis. But meeting Grover, you know, it's you're just really blessed when you hear some music, and it's somebody not only do you know, but that you can call a friend. If I can call everybody here in the panel, Steve has joined us. We're still looking for Hoopster. C-Wings, you here yet?
C-Wings is in the house.
D-Wings. Okay, well, then when that means when the music stops, and we're not going to stop it right away, C-Wings, well, you can talk to it. What's happening with the NFL, C-Wings? I want to thank you once again for that tremendous dinner tonight. And now, the young lady's name, her name is Debbie from the Seashore Restaurant, right?
Yeah, Seashore and City Island.
What's that?
Seashore Restaurant at City Island.
City Debbie, Ben, we were in there, and she was a Jet fan. And she started talking about with a big Jet fan. She's always been a Jet fan, and started talking to me and Sea Wings, and because a big concern about what's going to happen the forthcoming season. She talked about Tiger. Well, we said how there was two or three putts yesterday that just didn't go in. Had they dropped in yesterday, he would have been leading probably today when he came on the course. And very lovely, nice lady, and just a tremendous service. As the place was great, all the waiters and people who worked there were really outstanding. Really, very outstanding place. The food was great, and I was with great company, as with a great human being and friend, Sea Wings. Grover Washington Jr., one of the legendary saxmen of all times. I remember Leroy Neiman, the great Leroy Neiman, he has in his studio a mural that he did. And he did it maybe about 10 years ago. It's great jazz artist. He's got Ella Fitzgerald singing. He's got Louis Armstrong on the trumpet. He's got Miles Davis on the trumpet. He's got Billy Holiday, J.J. Johnson, who said is the greatest trombone player of all time. You know, J.J. was the guy who saved the trombone when the transition came from big band to bebop, because he had mastered the trumpet so well that it couldn't be deleted. And Leroy Neiman calls him the greatest trombone player of all time. And Leroy's funny because he has JJ there, he has Miles, he has Dizzy up there, he has Ella, he has Lady Day. Who do you have on the? I think he has. I think he may have Coop on it, but he said he was looking. He's funny. He said he was looking at the mirror one day, and he said, "You know what? I better put some white guys in this. some white guys up there." And he put in Jerry Mulligan, Gene Cooper. But it's a tremendous, tremendous mural in his studio, and it's one of his favorites. And you know, because he's originally a guy from Minneapolis. Minnesota, became great friends with the then founder of Playboy, Hugh Hefner, and they would watch the fights at Hef's house and Leroy's house. And, you know, Leroy went to school, went into military during the Depression time, which was a move that a lot of guys made. It was a career. Also, it was a way of 3 squares a day, some money in your pocket, and you could send some money home. And he went to art school from there. And the rest is history. I think everybody wants to be drawn somewhere by Leroy Neiman. He autographed a poster that he had done, a reprint of Muhammad Ali. He said, and I got to get that poster. I got to get a poster to see what he wrote on that. I think Ali, the one and only, and Mello, one of a kind. But great. The music has stopped. And we want to know now, C-Wings, has football stopped for this season? What's the latest on the NFL, the owners, and the strike talk?
Well, the latest news being reported by Jim Corbett of USA Today stating that Judge Susan Nelson will impose a forced mediation between the NFL owners and the players that are locked out under federal court oversight in Minnesota. He did not elaborate any further as to what's going to happen past that, being that the judge wanted the details of the Friday's conference call between both sides to remain private. So basically, the judge is going to rule that she's going to order both sides back to negotiations, which will be under the supervision of the court, which is what the players wanted because they feel that they will win an injunction against the NFL players, against the NFL owners. On the other hand, the owners wanted the talks to remain under a federal mediator, which it would be more or less in their favor. But it, as we see during the last lockout that they had, and when the NFL Players Association sued the owners, the courts actually sided with the players. So we're going to keep everyone updated on that. This is good news as far as the players are concerned. As we know, they're a group of 10 players led by a couple of quarterbacks, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Peyton Manning, led this lawsuit after the NFL Players Association decertified. So we just have to monitor the situation and see what's going to happen and how
now,
it's
going. Now, Big C, once, let's go back for those listening. The certification, you want to explain that to our audience?
The certification, when a union decertifies, that means that they actually are no longer a union, which gives the players the green light to go ahead and individually sue the owners in an antitrust lawsuit to invalidate the lockout. So that's what they did, which is a excellent strategy as opposed to going as a union to fight the owners. It's worked in the past, and it looks like it's going to work this time based on the reports that we're getting out of USA Today.
Mm. Going back to last night's fight, we want to thank the First Lady of Boxing, Kelly Swanson, who kept us so updated. The action, Heroes 5, Guerrero against Cotto, Kirkland against Reshada, Magnolia against Cotto. That fight last night, Morales, 6-time and 3-time world champion, said, "I want to acknowledge everyone who came to see this fight. I'm a good fighter. I fight for the people of Tawana. I think he, Medina, may have won a close fight, but not a clean win. I think that I won the fight because I landed the better punches. I thought I could beat him because I have a lot of speed. I also have dignity and heart. I want a rematch. I thought I won. I'm better than him. I finished the fight with my heart. Long live Mexico. Medina, WBA interim super lightweight champion. I'm very happy to have won the title. We knew that Egan Rouse was a great warrior. He was going to give a great fight. I never thought I was going to be an easy fight. I was expecting a war, and that's exactly what happened. I was staying positive and trying to catch him with the counterpunch. I never tired. I would like the rematch, but there are other fighters in the division I want to fight as well. It surprised me that he was able to take those punches. He was very difficult to knock out. In order to knock him out, you need a stick or a hammer or something.
Yeah.
I like when fighters stand in front of me and are brave. Morales is a good fighter and a strong fighter. He can continue his career because he'll do well. I really did find this fight close, but I came out at the winner as the end. Robert Guerrero, WBA and WBA interim lightweight champion. I had a great camp coming out of training in Las Vegas. This was the first time training away in a long time. It prepared me well. Now that I'm able to go out to training, I can learn a lot more. I feel great out there. I won two titles tonight. I'm a warrior. Sometimes you have to beat the guy at his own game. I got in there. I worked my jabs and my punches. I was never hurt in the fight. One of the main things I do was keep the speed and fire off shots. I'm ready for anyone. I want a shot at Marquez, the winner of the main event, Maradona, Zab, Judah at 140, or Mayweather. Bring them all. I'll take the best. I wasn't shocked at all by the point deductions. The referee gave me strict instructions before the fight. He said he was not going to mess around, so I wasn't surprised. He did a great job. He, Katidis, got him more than low blows, but you just have to keep going. He is the toughest guy I've ever fought. You haven't seen the best of Robert Guerrero yet. James Kirkland, junior middleweight contender. I don't know why they stopped the fight. This is not a 3-knockdown rule in Vegas. I'm really upset now. It was a messed up call. I was telling my one to keep fighting. He wasn't anything. He had no power. This was messed up. And Rashida, the former champion, thank you very much. It was an amazing opportunity to fight in Las Vegas, and we appreciate it. And you know Japan had a very big earthquake. It makes me happy and proud to come to the United States and win for my country. He, Kirkland, didn't expect this from me. He didn't respect what we had. Kirkland kept coming forward at me, so I kept going with my right, and it worked. I had my country on my side, and now I'm ready for a world title shot. From Brooklyn, former champion Paulie Malignaggi. I really felt good to be back in the spotlight and get a W. I feel great that I got to go 10 rounds against a good fighter. My last fight ended quickly, so this is what I wanted. I want to thank Golden Boy because a year after my Khan fight, everybody thought I was done, and now I came out and won a big fight on a major network. I thought I fought smart, executed a good plan. For anyone who wants to complain about how I don't step up to the plate and pick up the pace, I want you to know that I am tired of that shit. I look forward to the future, and I believe this is bright for me. Oscar De La Hoya, president of Golden Boy Promotions, I'm telling everybody that you can never count out Eric Morales. I said to myself and everyone, look at what happened to Kelly Pavlik and Bernard Hopkins. Look what happened to Manny Pacquiao and Oscar De La Hoya. Every single fight was a beautiful fight. Why don't we do a rematch of the whole card? This is the pay-per-view. As all the thing, giving fans exciting fights all of the time. And that is the notes. We want to thank Kelly Swanson, for getting that information out to the First Lady of Boxing. And, you know, Kelly was Rock Newman's girl Friday back when Butch Lewis was still promoting. So Kelly has come a long way, been tutored by some of the best.
She paid her bones.
She paid her dues, and now she stands as the foremost PR lady. Now, not only the foremost PR lady in boxing, but one of the best in the sweet science in the era. You know, and I think nobody has done more for Bernard Hopkins' career. She's done a great job marketing and promoting Bernard. I mean, you know, he is the shining star in so much of what he's gained from a public acclaim and adulation and respect is the job that Kelly Swanson has done as the PR lady. And no, she's a lady who she's also the PR man. I mean, she's here working with Golden Boy. She's a PR man for Floyd Mayweather. But the guy that she's done, I think the best of her outstanding work is the job that she's done for none other than Bernard Hopkins, the warrior who continues to fight. Notes from last night's fight. some of you heard some of the surmising and thoughts that were earlier projected by Dusty and the other fighters. So we got Morales, who had notes, Medina.
There was another fight, Doc, that we've forgotten about. It was that Tomas Adamek beat Shutout, fought a Shutout in Prudential Center, Newark. That's a Polish hometown of over McBride. The McBride who retired Mike Tyson, and now he's in line to fight Vitaly. That was the deal. You win this fight with McBride, and Vitaly will fight you. So he's on his way. This is his last tune-up before he fights Vitaly. And the reason he's fighting Vitaly is because Vitaly and Vladimir were fighting back and forth on who was going to beat up on David Haye. And Vladimir, being the younger guy, says, no, let me get him first. So Vladimir is fighting Hayes, and Adamic is fighting Vitaly, the older guy.
Well, you know, hey, that's what Hayes wants, because Hayes said he wants to beat the whole family anyway. So he don't care to come first. He said he's going to beat either way. That's his mindset.
That's his mindset. You know, and you always get what you ask for. So Vladimir got David Haye. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens.
You know. Take the belts from those giants. That's the number one thing. I truly believe maybe Adamok has an opportunity of truly taking the belt from Vitaly Klitschko.
He's fast, he's hard.
Does Haye have a chance?
Does Haye have a chance?
Yeah.
With that left jab with that haymaker, he has a chance because Vladimir both of them don't have much of a chin. In fact, between the two of them, the one who has a less chin is Vladimir.
They really do need a big shake up in the heavyweight division. We need somebody that's gonna bring some pandemonium, some excitement, some charisma. I haven't seen that since young Mike Tyson.
Chris Areola. I thought maybe he could bring some excitement. I know that HBO was backing him. HBO was giving a lot of publicity to Cristobal Areola. Larry Merchant loved Cristobal Areola, but he couldn't beat one of the Klitschkos, and obviously he's on
the road back. Did you see the beating he took from one of the Klitschkos? I think it was Vladimir beat him. Yeah, and he just jabbed him, slapped him, and jabbed him until the corner said, no mas. The guy couldn't get within an inch of the guy. You know, he couldn't get inside. He couldn't do anything. He was just a solid punching bag with two arms. So
I think he'll return. I think he'll basically return back into the, definitely the top five, in the heavyweight division. Of course, the heavyweight division is a weak division, but we'll definitely see.
The main thing about heavyweight division.
Did you see him fight Adamek? Adamek walked all over him,
Yes.
And beat him. You know, he seems to have lost something since he lost to the Klitschkos, meaning Areola. And when he fought Adamek, which I figured he was going to beat Adamek, Adamek turned around and just floundered with him and beat him for 10 out of 10 rounds, man. I don't know whether he'll get back his stride the way he was prior to the Klitschkos, because the guy was a monster. He will hit you with everything and knock you out. He retired Jim Big Time McCline, But when he fought Adamek from after the Klitschko fight, it didn't seem like anything, it's sad,
Can we all praise Emmanuel Stewart? Because I believe Emmanuel Stewart had some influence. In my opinion, Emmanuel Stewart is the greatest trainer.
Tommy Hearns, he had
all the great fighters. And he was a great manager, too. He also had Michael Moore, who he sold the contract to. Because Michael Moore wouldn't pay attention to him.
Let me go get this poster. You talk about
Basically, what I was trying to tell you with Cotto. He took the useless Klitschkos. He took the useless Leonard Stewart. Leonard Lewis, who were nothing but bombers. They only had a bomb for a right hand and no jab. And look what he turned them into. Unbeatable monsters. They make him fight tall. That's what he's making Cotto fight. He's making Cotto fight tall but stick behind the jab. Emmanuel Stewart is the Svengali of those four guys. Yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of Emmanuel Stewart.
Yeah.
Can you hear me, gentlemen?
Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of Emmanuel Stewart, you know, I have spoken to him, and he knows Dust and panel. He told me that we have yet to see the best of Lennox Lewis. He said we've never seen the best of Lennox Lewis. He said the guy's a monster in sparring. The guy's a monster just destroying guys. But he says, well, you know, when he's out in a, you know, an actual fight, his words, and I quote, I have to beg him to throw the right hand.
I have to
beg him to throw the left hook. I have to prod this guy to do everything. He's like, you guys have never seen the best of Lennox Lewis yet.
Wow. So he retired too soon?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm glad he's retired because I don't know how much longer he had. But
yeah.
I was surprised to find out that he says that, hey, I got a pride Lennox to do everything. He's like the Lennox that I see working the gym with his farm partners ever came out, you know, that way. He's like, you guys would be amazed. You guys would be shocked at what a monster this guy could be.
Wow. So he cut. Well, you're telling me if I get the picture, he just cut his career too short before we saw the best of Lunas because.
Well,
I remember,
he told me that before the Big Lisco fight.
Right.
So Big C has the controls. Big C. Big C. Big C.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let Lady A in. She's waiting to get in.
Where's Lady A?
Lady A, where are you?
Big C's going to bring in.
Everyone's
in. Big C?
All right, if I see her there, I'll let her in. Everyone's in, though.
Oh, really?
She said she
just
called.
Oh, there
she goes. Yeah.
She just popped
up. Right,
okay,
she's in.
Yeah, okay.
All
right, then. She's in now.
Because when I remember seeing Lennox lose the first time, was in the Olympics when he blasted an undertrained, out-of-shape party dude called Riddick Bowe. And he had nothing but a right hand and a clubbing left hand. And I remember Emmanuel Stewart saying, I'm going to take over his training, and I'm going to give him the jab that he doesn't have, the left hook he doesn't have, and the straight right hand that he doesn't have. And sure enough, he did polish it. But now you're telling me that we will never get to see the best of Lewis? Oh, my Lord.
Manny told me that he could have been a much better all-around fighter than he shows.
Yeah, because...
We got to remember, I almost saw Frank Bruno take him out.
Yeah, exactly. And that fight with Vitaly, when Vitaly begged for one more round because he had staggered Lewis in that round when he got cut. He staggered Lewis and said, please, one more round. The doctor says, no good, because the man was viciously cut. I mean, the cut was lateral, horizontal, and vertical on his left eyebrow, and they couldn't let that go. But he had staggered Lewis in that same round, so maybe who knows what would have happened if he had gone out in that round that he begged for. Maybe it would have been, you know, he would have been the victor.
But he never fought him again after that.
No, he never fought again after that. You know, he fought the other guys, and look what happened when he fought Hasim Rahman knocked him dead. You know, so in Europe somewhere, or in Jamaica, whatever the heck it was, he caught him clean and knocked him down, man. I mean, he knocked him unconscious.
And don't forget him getting blasted out thus by Oliver McCall.
Yeah, Oliver McCall too. So if we never got to see, well, I don't know about that because this guy, I think he did the best that he could with the limited talents. And, you know, some people question his heart.
That's the thing. I mean, you got a big guy here, one of the bigger heavyweights.
Exactly.
6'5", 240.
Right.
I mean, big reach. I mean, you know, the guy seems to have, at least physically speaking, all the makings of a top-flight big heavyweight.
Exactly.
You talking about Vitaly?
Lennox Lewis.
No, Lennox
Lewis.
Lennox.
Because to me, they fight stiff.
Yeah.
They have that European style, that stiff, like upright, that style.
Straight up, that
style. They have that stiff style. Like, I don't know, it's like a European
stiff,
kind of style.
Yeah, because
even like, you know who fights like that too? Winky Wright. He like with the peekaboo style. He's straight
what
up.
What happened to him, Lady A?
Winky Wright.
What happened to Winky?
I tell you, after his last fight, I don't know, man. He didn't come back after that. I don't know.
No, he's trying to come back. He's back in training, but I think the fight that he was scheduled to fight was canceled. Either he got injured or the opponent got injured, but he's trying to make a comeback, and I don't see why, man, because he has nothing left. He took a bad beating, I mean a real serious beating, from the great, undefeated Paul Williams many years ago when they were 54 pounds.
Right,
and Paul Williams slapped them all over the place.
Did.
But
you know, I just think, you know what it is I think, too, you guys got to look at it, too. Winky Wright was never the kind of guy that drew at the box office either. I mean,
he was
never that kind of fighter, you know. I mean, look at who he fought. He's really fought a lot of the big names. Fernando Vargas.
Yeah.
He fought down the line. Bernard Hopkins, Jermaine Taylor, right? He fought Jermaine, right? I think he fought Jermaine, right? I think he fought Jermaine, right? Did he? Did he fight Jermaine?
Yeah, he fought Jermaine.
He fought Jermaine, right? I think he fought Jermaine, right?
You know something? I gave Winky Wright the fight over Jermaine.
He fought Trinidad. He fought Trinidad.
Yeah.
He beat Trinidad.
Yeah, but he walked all over Trinidad.
You know, so he has fought. I mean, it's not like he hasn't fought worthy opponents. He has. But
well,
as far as the draw,
he was never a draw because he was never. He was always an opponent to the promoter.
Yeah.
The promoters always hired him as an opponent.
Yeah.
Right.
For some
money,
reason, he couldn't sell tickets. He couldn't sell tickets.
Exactly. But and then he fought Fernando Vargas when he was when Vargas was undefeated. And guess what? I gave it to Winky Wright. He slapped the crap out of Fernando Vargas. But
yeah, but so did Mosley.
Yeah.
Remember those two fights with Mosley? He
wow.
walked out of there looking like a frog with his eyes all messed up.
Yeah, exactly. So it's true. He was only regarded as an opponent, even though he won the 54-pound crown and he won something else. But he was never on the same pedestal, so to speak, boxing's pedestal, as the other highlighters like the La Hoyas and Mayweathers, and you know, I don't know how well he would have done if he fought Pacquiao, but the fact of the matter is that all the guys he fought, you know, were just guys who were better than him, you know, and he only beat Trinidad because Trinidad was on his campaign, his $10 million per fight campaign to make
a comeback. And wait a minute, they told Trinidad not to take that fight, and he took it.
He took it for $10 million.
In Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, Nene.
Yeah.
In Puerto Rico.
But he took it for $10 million. You know, Don King is one generous dude that said, "You come back, I guarantee you $10 million." He got $10 million with Mayorga. He got $10 million with Winky Wright. He got $10 million with Roy Jones. That's $30 million that he got slapped around for, and then he's back. I mean, he doesn't have to come back. When Don King at times he takes care of you, he takes care of you because that was his boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Winky Wright, yes, he's trying to make a comeback now. I don't know what he's going to do, you know. But he took a bad beating the last time I saw him from Paul Williams, and in fact, Paul Williams almost knocked him out. And I never saw Winky Wright take such a beating that the referee looked at him questioningly. Should I stop it? He was cut on both eyes.
The text here that donated $1 million to Harlem RBI, that was in the 7th of April El Diario.
Okay, all right. And not today's because I don't think I saw.
No, it wasn't today. I said I donated the 7th of April. He made a donation to, and then
the day before,
and Cano became the first three players since Vasquez, Alomar, and Travis to win gold gloves.
Exactly.
Same
midfield,
same team. So we want to salute them for the gold gloves. I got to look at some birthdays here. Is there any special birthdays in April? My good friend Keith Mendoza. And I'm trying to see anybody else we had. Oh, man, you know what? Dag, we got Harold Weston's birthday was the 7th, too. Yeah, Harold Weston.
Oh, that's my boy, Harold. We didn't give a shout out to Harold.
Shout out to
we got to get Harold.
We got to call Harold. That's the man, Harold, right
do
there.
We have another. How many people got online now? We got four people, five people on. Who's on?
We got Sado. Rooney. We got me.
Sea Wings.
We got Sea Wings. We got. Rusty.
How many we got? We got online six.
We got six in total.
Yes.
Let me see. I don't know. Let me see.
Yeah, you got the whole crew. Except Harold.
Yeah. Let me see if we can get Harold.
Look at this. Top of the ninth, Boston 4, Yankees nothing.
Rip.
Today is the day is still the 10th.
And the Mets lost.
Yeah.
And
well,
ooh,
no surprise there.
Did they ever? And they deserve the bounce.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're ready for the Mets to lose another 110
games. Listen,
Dusty,
stop dissing my team, okay?
Yeah. Let me tell you something. These guys come in. They got rid of Washington, who slapped them around. Now Colorado's coming in. Oh, my God. They're lucky if they can score one run, man. Come on. These guys, man. Yeah.
I know.
And Boston is giving, I mean, the Yankees are giving Boston their second win in the season. Oh, my Lord. I gotta laugh at these guys. The only team that they lose to is Boston. Everybody else, they're slapping all over the place.
Yeah, started the whole season smacking, everybody started
Minnesota,
the season smacking Boston around.
And here they come with Boston and they get slapped around.
Where's the high-powered offense I heard so much about? Where's Jeter? Where's A-Rod? Where's
Rooney, go ahead. You sticking up for me, Rooney? Go ahead, stick up for me, Rooney. Go ahead, Rooney. You sticking up for me?
They have Eric Chavez in for A-Rod today.
Eric Chavez is in for A-Rod. I think he got a single. But that's about it. They are on the way to being shut out. It's two outs already.
What do you expect from an all-star, you know?
Come on. Where's Grandis? Where Grandis? Where are these guys?
Yeah. Texada here. Oh,
wait, we're
going to
get Willie Randolph out of retirement. He'll help you. Don't worry.
Exactly. And here I have Texada, who started off with four home runs and three. The guy couldn't even hit a single with a freaking tennis racket, man. Jesus Christ, man! They only in America. You got these bum Yankees doing this, man. Oh my God! The only time they got on base because they walked. Do you know that Beckett had a no hitter going into the sixth inning? I'm telling you. I said, oh my God, look at these bums, man. Jesus. I'm hard on athletes when they don't perform the way they're supposed to perform.
But they're
I'm
still making
that's
millions
right.
of dollars. You're getting all upset, Dusty, and they're still making millions of dollars.
They're making millions of dollars to look stupid, man. Oh, God. Yesterday we had a conversation on Manny Ramirez. Man, I don't even want to hear about the dude anymore, man. He pissed me off, man.
Hey,
he's
now come
dude.
On, don't you know what they were saying the other day? That was Manny being Manny.
Oh, Manny being Manny. This is what brings Manny being Manny. So now Manny gotta be a wise guy. He got you know what he did as soon as he quit Tampa Bay. As soon as he quit Tampa Bay, I heard he took a flight to DR. God.
And
I hope he stays there, man. Jesus.
Big
he wants to sign with the Mets.
Yeah.
Hey, they can't do work. Big C, be on the lookout for that. I just talked to Howard Weston. He should be trying to join us in a minute or two.
All right, you got it.
Okay. I hope we can get him.
You're going to be a DH for the
Mets. One of the Mets.
Come on, Rooney. You got to stick up for me now, Rooney. What's up, Rooney?
Oh, you know what? You're at all time, lady. At all time.
Yeah.
Indeed. But I'm with Dusty. I'm looking at athletes, high-priced, crybaby athletes who don't perform.
Okay.
Well, Manny has performed. Manny Ramirez has performed. Manny Ramirez was his name leaked on that list last year of guys using steroids, and I'm just still befuddled by the fact that that whole list of 100 and something names.
Only
A-Rod, Manny Ramirez, and Big Poppy all happened to be Dominican, all happened to be minorities, happened names had to be exposed. It's amazing. I mean, there were no Blanquitos on that list.
Hey,
I mean,
come on, Doc. Stop calling racism. I got protected boys.
Yeah, Blanquitos don't take it.
I got hidden, man, so nobody knows about
So
nobody knows about the new junkies that I have on my corner, man. So,
okay.
Hey, but Doc, how do you get caught twice, Doc? How do you get caught twice, Doc?
He was banned the first 50 games, was it?
Yeah.
The Dodgers. He faced a 100-game banning now for the second time.
Yeah.
The third time will be banned for life. So he says, I'm not going to sit on the bench for 100 games. I quit.
Oh, my Lord, I quit.
And then he took a flight out
of the hard work in which he sparred more than 140 rounds, undefeated WBO,
WNBA Super Flyweight Champion Cesar Genito. Cesar Jr., 20-0, 15 KOs, has completed training at the Olympic Village in Salinas, Puerto Rico, and left for Argentina. He will challenge the WBA World Champion Omar Navasquez, 33-0, 2 knockout, 2 draws, 19 KOs, on Friday, April 15th, at the Club Estudios de Baja Blanca in Baja Blanca.
Is that Friday night fight?
That's next Friday.
Yeah, this, Friday night fight.
Next Friday.
Teddy Atlas and the other dude will narrate. You know something I got to tell you. Howard Davis, right?
I don't want to hear it. He has a son. Don't tell us.
He has a son.
You told us.
Akai Davis.
Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Oh, no.
And he has a son who fought. Super middleweight this past Friday. He fought some undefeated guy named
Did he win or lose, Dusty?
He won. He upset the avocado. He beat this undefeated guy who was being primed for a bigger crate, and he slapped the crap out of the dude and dropped him with a left hook to the gut.
Big question here. Harold, you calling in?
Yes.
Hey, Harold.
Everybody, hush up. Harold Weston's here. Everybody say happy birthday to Harold.
Happy birthday, Harold. Thank you, everybody.
Happy Sweet 16, Harold.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I feel like that, too.
Hey, Sweet 16 times 2. Harold's birthday was the 7th. And we got you here. We were looking to have Greg Page's wife join us. She called me earlier today, but I guess she got busy. And she told me something. You know, she was like, Greg was one of 4 champions, heavyweight champions out of Louisville. We knew Ali was other. I forgot about Jimmy Ellis, though, Harold.
Oh, no. Jimmy was always in the picture. Remember, Jimmy won the tournament where Joe Frazier knocked him out for finally being the heavyweight champion of the world.
Ellis won a very close fight against Patterson.
Right, right.
Win the title.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Cosell was, if you really wanted to know who really won the fight, Rush Patterson. And she mentioned another guy back in 1918. There had to be a white guy. And he said, you know, Louisville was the only place to play. I said, no. Brooklyn, New York, Floyd Patterson, Riddick Bowe, Shannon Briggs, and Mike Tyson are all heavyweight champions, too. But, Harold, how you feeling on your birthday, baby?
I feel fantastic, man. I feel great. I'm in good shape and everything. I got my waistline is real good. You know what I'm saying? I'm down to 32 waistline. I'm feeling fantastic, man.
How big was your waistline before? When you came down from what?
Well, I came down for quite a ways. Let me tell you, I was hitting the 200 mark, but now I'm hitting down 69, 68, 70.
Oh,
cool.
You sound
good.
Are
you turning for a comeback? What's going on? Nah, bro. I'm just trying to live a good life, man. I'm trying to be happy and everything and just live a good life because, you know, just down this road now, boy, you just got to enjoy this life and just be happy, man. Just have good health.
At this point in the game, it's later for the field goal team, baby. We going in.
Yeah, we going in now. You know what I'm saying? We just going to live it, man. I mean, you know, I'm just going to live it all the way through, man. Just enjoy myself. I'm not going through no aggravation. I have a goal that I want to set, and I'm just on top of what I want to do. So I'm just doing it. And I'm going to do it my way. I mean, as simple as that. I'm going to do it my way.
Doc Stanley, Sports Enough on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul, Sports Enough for the show. We're dedicating this show to Debbie from up in City Island and the Seashore Restaurant, and to Harold Weston Jr. And also,
God, Debbie the barmaid?
No, Debbie the waiter. You don't know Debbie. Cut it out. You don't know Debbie like we know Debbie.
I was about to say, because you're up in City Island. I'm like, Debbie, the one that works in like 2 different restaurants up there? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, hold on. Debbie,
she's a sweetheart. She is a sweetheart at the bar up there.
You saw my baby, right?
Me and
Doctor. Good.
You know her? You know her? Lady A?
Yeah, I know Debbie.
Yeah. A nice lady, right?
Yeah, you saw Debbie from Seashore.
And a big Jet fan. One quickly, let's do this thing here as we reach the 10th. Happy birthday to the legendary stickball legend, Billy Bang Bang Davis, who celebrated a birthday today. My Uncle Paul and Lily celebrated another anniversary. I meant to call it today. It's both her birthday and her anniversary. And maybe I can still get her book while we still talk here. It's a birthday and anniversary. Tomorrow, my niece Stacy celebrates a birthday. Keith Mendoza, Reverend Keith Mendoza, celebrated a birthday yesterday. Kathy Gamble, one of the astute cooks. And ladies of class and character of New York City on the 8th. Harold Weston Jr. on the 7th. Happy anniversary to Mark and Provy Monchek. Celebrated another anniversary on the 6th. And George Santiago, close friend, played some minor league baseball, major league baseball, and the minor leagues too with Dusty Baker, Soko Ono, my man Jamie at used to be Angels, Damien, my nephew, and Justino's son celebrated the birthday on the 2nd, and I got somebody's anniversary here on the 1st, and we round out the rest of the month. Crystal Hart's going to have a birthday on the 20th. My Aunt Jenny on the 16th. Sabine, my niece. I got a friend in Brazil. And we'll talk more about that as time moves on. Got a chance to talk to my buddy Desio tonight. Situation that was really kind of crazy. But anyway, Harold, did you catch any of the fights last night?
No, I missed it. I fell asleep. I meant to see it, but I fell asleep. And I heard that finally Davis won a big fight. He upset somebody, so I'm congratulating him on his victory because that's something unusual for him to do.
Have you seen him fight before?
Yeah, I've never been present. I mean, he smacks you, and you know, I mean, there's nothing exciting about him. I mean, he's not gonna knock over no walls or anything. Nobody's gonna break down the doors to go see him. I mean, you know, I'm glad he won the fight before the kid that was undefeated, if I'm not mistaken, out of 25-something fights, and
he
beat him up and everything. So I'm happy for him because he needed that kind of victory. I mean, because he's never proven himself, and he had to prove himself. Not that the fighter he fought was all that great, but at least he fought somebody that they considered. They were trying to build up as the next thing. But I'm glad he won.
Howard Davis' son?
Yeah, Howard Davis' son.
Yeah, right. Our guy Davis or something like that.
Yeah.
He did a masterful job on that big monster.
Did he? I didn't see it.
I saw it Friday. He fought Friday on ESPN, and they were building the other guy up. He was 20-0 with 14 KOs, and after he got rid of this guy, he was going to go out there and challenge the contenders. And the guy was nothing, man. Davis just slapped him. In fact, knocked him down with a body punch.
Really? Wow.
He put him on the guy winced like if his liver was going. And he just made it back. And this kid Davis, Howard Davis' son, just jabbed him and beat him and beat him and beat him and beat him.
I'm happy for him. I mean, you know, Davis, I mean, like I said, he's not going to knock no doors down for everybody wanting to go see him. I mean, you know, he won finally a major fight, and that's good for him.
Yeah, major fight.
But,
there's something about Howard Davis that you said. I don't know if you and the panel are going to think I'm crazy, but back when he and Ray Leonard and all of them were in the Olympics, you know, I actually thought Howard was a better fighter. I thought he was better than Ray.
No, there's no thought about it. Howard Davis was voted the most outstanding fighter in the tournament. Howard Davis was voted the best. And you look at that crew, the Sphinx brothers won a gold medal, Ray won a gold medal, Leo Randolph won a gold medal, won a gold medal, everybody won a world championship except him. But, you know, it's no surprise. Howard Davis was picked as the best fighter in that tournament. He was
the whole tournament.
He was the best fighter in the Olympics. Okay.
Yeah, but see, you know what Howard Davis' mistakes was? Mm-hmm. They were more about getting the money instead of getting the glory. And the fact was is that as he was a pro, he would not take no other fights unless he was fighting for his contract with the networks. Okay. So unless he was getting that big check for every fight, he wasn't fighting. So he always had those easy fights. So when he got like 13 fights or 14 fights, they put him in the world championship fight against that Englishman, the young man that he fought that was just a rugged.
What?
A rugged dude,
Watts? Was it Watts?
Yeah, Watts. Right.
Yeah, the ATTS, right.
You know, the thing about Watts, you know, you talk about Watts, I mean, and you talk about how rugged Watts was. I mean, Aguayo beat Watts, but Aguayo took a beating. They wind up doing surgery on Aguayo. They wanted to do surgery after the fight, but they wind up doing the surgery on Aguayo as he was going back home to Nicaragua. So that's how rough Watt was. I mean, if you remember, Alexis won a unanimous decision, but a tough fight. But Watt was, as Harold said, well, Harold knows the game.
He's rough, man.
But hey, listen, they did surgery on Alexis
Yeah, Arguello paid the price, right? Yeah.
As he went back home, I think they did it on the plane or the train or something as he was going back to Nicaragua. They wanted to do it right there. And you're talking about that. And then I remember he fought Chapo. In fact, I'm looking at the autograph glove from the late Edward Rosario. And he was winning the fight. Chapo knocked him down, I think, the last round, and he lost the fight. How good was Edwin Rosario, Harold, and how crazy? First of all, how good was he? And then second question is, how crazy were people to think that he had won that fight with Hector Camacho? Talk to me, Harold.
I know. Edwin Rosario was a very good fighter. I mean, you know, he hit hard, and he was a disciplined kind of young man, when he was coming up. You know, that just think that, you know, a lot of what happens to a lot of the young guys, especially Latinos, and you guys can verify, is that when they hit that age 25, 26, 27, they go crazy. Because now they realize they girls like them, they got money, and they don't know what to do. And they just do stupid things, and that's when they can't make 30. They can't they can't get over 30 and still be a champion and still have potential like they have. They age is at 17 all the way up to like 27. After that, they finish.
Yeah, exactly. That's what happened to Alex Roberts, the Bronx Bomber.
Alvin Zario was a good fighter. I mean, like I said, disciplined.
Yeah.
Learned what did what he had to do. Can punch. Okay. And I mean, if you went into the fight with him, you was gonna have a fight. You had a fight on your hand. It wasn't no joke. You had a fight on your hand with him.
I always
liked Edwin Rosario. I always did.
You were gonna get hurt because I think Rosario. Yeah. You remember? I think Harold that he had a string of consecutive knockouts.
Right.
What I remember about him was two things. He fought Camacho, my man. And at a fight that King promoted, and at the end of the fight, all the writers were talking about, well, you know, Edwin had hit Hector, and they thought he won the fight. I said, no, you guys are out of your mind. Edwin Rosario is not going to box 12 rounds Hector Camacho and outbox him. You're crazy. Okay, he may hit him, he may have hurt him, but you're not going to tell me that Edwin Rosario is going to box 12 rounds against Hector Camacho and outbox him, okay? So just take your stupid prejudice, your ignorance, and your dislike for Camacho and
maybe
shove it up your coolie.
You never know.
Edwin Rosario could not outbox. Nobody at that time could outbox Hector Camacho for 12 rounds. And then the next thing I remember about him, he fought Chavez. It was a press conference at the Waldorf Astoria, and him and Chavez, and he got up and he said some negative things about Chavez, and Chavez got up behind him and said, you know what? He said, I don't know this guy, but he's showing me no respect. I'm a champion, like he's a champion. I don't know him. Why is he saying these things about me? He said, at first, I was going to knock him out. Now I'm going to punish him. And he did that. He beat the snot out of
Edwin
Rosario.
Yeah, but let me tell you, Doc. Well, let me tell you. When Julio got them, Chavez got him. Rosario was finished.
He
had nothing left. I mean,
I
can't give praise to him on the fact of what he did to the man.
I'm not praising Camacho. What I'm saying is that Chavez.
Not praising Camacho, but I mean, just the fact
with
Julio did.
I still think at the best Chavez beat him, but Chavez was saying, you know what? I'm coming here respecting him with two champions. You know, this guy's talking all this shit. It's like the Matador against Cotto. It's like, you know, hey, man, you know, I have respect for this guy. He's a champion. I'm a champion. He's Latin. I'm Latin. I mean, what's all this? He said, okay.
Let me tell you, if they was in their pride, I'm going to tell you the truth. Rosario would have beaten, okay?
Yes. I agree with Harold.
What you going on is Chavez's punching power. And what's the name had punching power, too? But what he had, he had faster hands than Julio Chavez did.
Exactly.
And he was a little bit more smarter, thinking kind of fighter than he was,
well,
too.
So you're telling me that the Rosario we saw was just finished?
Oh, he was finished then, yeah.
Okay, how far down, because to me it wouldn't have mattered at his best tonight against Camacho. How far gone was, on a scale of 1 to 10, where was he at when he fought Camacho?
Well, first of all, he was like about a five or a six. Let me interject this right now. Before, correct me if I'm wrong. Before he fought Chavez, Rosario, didn't Rosario fight Azuma Nelson?
Yeah, he had already fought Azuma
Nelson.
Yeah, and
he took a beating from Azuma Nelson.
Yeah. Yeah, he was shot.
And then he fought Chavez.
Yeah, he was shot. He was shot by that time.
He was shot.
Yeah.
The guy was shot. He did the best he could against Azuma, and nobody beats Azuma.
And you gotta understand, Doc. And see, this is this is a little secret that people don't know about.
What
he was already messing with drugs and stuff.
Yeah,
he was out there drinking. He was doing all the crazy things that he didn't do when he was young. Okay,
exactly.
That's where the downfall came in at.
If I'm correct, didn't he die from drugs or something?
Yeah.
Rosario,
speaking of, does anybody have any word on Kirkland's trainer at the end of the fight? Max Kellerman
was
talking
sick.
About it.
They had to take him to the hospital or something.
Yeah, there's no word on how he's doing? Or
No, there was no follow-up on the fact of what happened to the man.
He collapsed in the locker room, they said,
right? Yeah, the locker room, yeah. He collapsed in the locker room. I think it was in his 70s or something.
Yeah.
But he collapsed in the locker room, yeah. But getting back to Rosario, Rosario had done everything what the Harold Weston said. He had gotten to the party mood. He was in the fast lane like Mercury Morris and did all that Hollywood Henderson nonsense. And then because of his punch, he felt that he could still do what he do. And he ran into a buzzsaw like Azuma Nelson. Forget about it. Azuma Nelson took all the coke and drugs and booze out of his body.
He did.
There was another guy, the guy who lost to Serafin Sanchez, was it? Edward, oh, my God. Another Puerto Rican guy, 120 pounds. He fought 25 fights. He had 25 knockouts. And he fought Serafin Sanchez. Oh, God, I forget his name. Edwin something. Anyway, he's now in the Hall of Fame of Puerto Rico. But he's another guy who fought that war with Serafin Sanchez. He knocked out Serafin 3 times, but Serafin knocked him down 4 times. And after that fight, he got into the booze and the nonsense, and he was no good anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, these guys go crazy, man. Hector Camacho was another sucker from Lexington Avenue, Spanish Harlem. He ran the Lexington Avenue projects out there. He had his Cadillac parked in front of every bodega and running out with the homeboys and doing the booze and doing the broads, and then he got messed up, man.
He did coke for a while, too. I heard he had stuff.
He just went crazy.
He just got out of the joint maybe 6 months ago, man.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny about the fact that it was like Puerto Rico was having a machine over there where they were bringing out fighters. I mean, really, they were bringing out such great fighters. I mean, it was like guys was just coming out of the machine and just say, Jesus Christ, who's training these guys? I mean, it was getting crazy. And then Panama, in Panama, they were doing the same thing at one time.
Exactly. Producing
and it was just getting crazy. And the Dominican Republic, I mean, it was just exciting at that particular time. But then all the machine looked like the machine broke. And now,
He's right, though, Donnie.
There's one little weight. There's one little weight that I always say what could have been. I want your opinion on him because I always wonder what the hell would this guy do. He was going to fight Marvin Hagler, who was 18 years old. And that would be Tony Ayala. How good would Tony Ayala have been?
Oh, Tony wasn't that good. I mean, they picked the right guys in front of Tony Ayala. I remember Tony. Tony was just a game like guy. You know, he's a rugged bull. He just came straight forward. He had a nice little punch.
Yeah.
And then that's all he is. I mean, he wasn't nothing scientific that you had to worry about. You just had to be in shape enough. I mean, he'd have got the dog beat out of him sooner or later with somebody. I mean,
Harold.
Yes.
How good was in your opinion at his prime? How good was Wilfred Benitez?
Benitez was great.
Okay.
When you talk about great, I mean he was great. You can look at his record and see how great he was.
Yeah.
I mean he was great. If he didn't get hooked, like he's another one. If he didn't go and lose it, if his father would have stayed, his insane would have been all right. Then those kids would have been great. Because his brother, Frankie, was definitely good. I mean, they were definitely great. But the fact we've had Benitez could fought anybody at any time in boxing, at any time in life, and still been champion of the world. That's how smooth he was and everything
You do feel he fought enough formidable opponents to put him up there, right?
What?
Yeah.
Let me just say this. At 17, he beat one of the greatest junior welterweights in the world at the time.
Kid Pambele,
man.
15. When I say great, I'm talking about he was great. He was champion for like 5 years or something like that.
Right.
And he went to other people's hometown and was beating people. That's how Pambele, he was that great. And Benitez beat him solid. When you
exactly.
say solid, I mean solid.
I do remember he started
17.
Very young. He was very young when he was up there.
Oh, yeah. So I used to box Benitez when we was all at the – I was like about 15, 16. And he was like 12 or something
right.
like that. And he used to come to New York with his father and his brother and everything. And I used to box Benitez and Frankie at the time when we was all
well,
when they came
was,
to New York.
Let me ask you a question of a prodigy.
Huh?
Something of a
since
prodigy
we're talking about
child. Something of a child prodigy as far as boxing is concerned. But a new world champion at 17 is – pretty lofty.
Oh no, they had already, you know, one thing about Benitez's father, he was grooming those kids since they were like 5 years old, pretty believe
yeah.
me.
Really?
In
your opinion, since we're talking about fighters that you know, based on their skill level, you know, and they, you know, got sidetracked as far as drugs or alcohol, whatever it was. I want to take it back a little further back in the maybe late 80s to a fighter that always comes to my mind that, he was a heavyweight, Mitch Green.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how do you think he would have been if he didn't go down that road? I mean, you know.
Well, Mitch Green, one thing I can say, Mitch had every potential of being a good heavyweight.
Yes,
if
absolutely.
He didn't go down that road. Believe me, he had he took a good shot. Mitch could
yeah.
box well. He had pretty good fast hands for a heavyweight.
And
he had good stamina, too. But
yeah.
his whole thing was, like you said, when Mitch started messing with those drugs, you couldn't talk to him no more. And
exactly.
that was the whole downfall for Mitch Green. And if he did change up trainers a little bit, got a little better trainer involved, he would have been a good heavyweight. Believe me. Because Mitch wasn't scared of nobody. I mean,
Tyson never knocked him out. Went the whole...
Well,
what, 12
I remember
rounds
the late call. The Doc Stanley Sports Def on the Blake Radio. They were Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Def. It shows a Friday night. It's a sports wrap up. Tiger Woods showed well at.
It's all over.
Masters.
McIlroy won.
Yeah, we know McIlroy won it. Better be over by now. We are talking. Yeah, now, yeah, I remember the late Carl Nesfield, who was Malcolm X's personal photographer, and when Mitch Blood was fighting. Tyson, and he said, you know, Mike better not sleep on my boy Mitch, you know, and the thought was, had Mitch been better conditioned, and as you said, Hal, not mess with the narcotics, he would have been, he'd have gave Mike a good fight, and he would have been a lot better. Would he have had a chance to win the title, Hal?
He would have had a shot. He would have won one of those titles. Believe
wow.
me, he would have won one of those titles.
Yeah.
yeah.
He had a potential, but,
yeah.
you know, the fast lane. They told me the fast lane of being. In fact, I used to call him the Frankie Crocker of boxing because that's flat. I'm a really flash, the flash and dash and the fur coats and the bell bottoms and the high heels and the process and the Hollywood glasses, man. And he talked a lot of jive, man. You know,
yeah,
oh, I'll do
a lot
and
of jive.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was. But if the man has spent all that time in the gym. I think he would have been maybe if not a total good champ, but at least he would have won a title. He would have been up there knocking people. And yes, you're right. He would have given Mike Tyson a hard way to go because he was no joke.
They would have never
Green
made the
was
fight.
A monster,
if he just stayed on his game,
yeah.
they would
yeah.
never made that fight with Mike Tyson, Mitch Green.
Exactly, exactly.
They would have never
exactly.
made the fight.
Chief yeah. Rocker,
because
he had like a 27-inch reach, right? I mean,
yeah.
it was hard to get in on him.
The reach
yeah.
is something that you know you have to take advantage of. I read a quote one time where Duran said everybody ever fought it had to reach on him. But the thing about you talk about Frankie Crocker, the late great Frankie Crocker, who changed the course. Of not well, if you change the course
Jazz.
Of radio in New York City, you're changing the course of radio. No, WBLS. You're changing the course of radio and
WWRL
well,
before that.
Well, he changed the course of music at WBLS where he brought his famed Stereo in Black, where you hear Herbie Hancock, Miles Davis, Three Dog Night, The Temptations, Aretha Franklin, The Beatles, Nina Simone. The Temptations, all
Simone,
happening now
right
on Stereo in Black. And Lee Linwood Maxwell Simon, manager of the legendary Gloria Gaynor, told me, because Frankie used to have a pick hit of the week, and he said if Frankie Crocker picked your record as pick hit of the week, you had a hit record.
You had a hit record. Exactly.
You had a hit record.
Hey,
let
me tell you something about Frankie, Doc, that just for this reason alone, he's my idol, okay?
He once dated James Kennedy. That's good enough for me.
He what?
He once dated James Kennedy.
Well, you know, he married Willie Mays' daughter. He was married to Willie Mays' daughter, Marguerite, and he married his first wife, maybe his only wife, was Marguerite, who was Willie Mays' wife. So he was married into the Mays family. You're right.
Yeah.
He started WWRL, him, Enoch Gregory, the Dixie Drifter. In fact, I have an album, WWRL, and it has that great sad girl. But it was a BLS where he became more renowned. It had the great lines, man. Frankie said, if I'm not on your radio, then your radio ain't on.
It's not out of some crap.
No, that was it. If I'm not on your radio, then your radio ain't on.
Talk about the downfall of boxing, even though I made that analogy, is Benitez had not gotten into the booze and the drugs and all that. He wound up almost in the same thing that Muhammad Ali is in. He's now, I read an article in the Diario the other day, I think I told you that he's almost a paraplegic.
Well, I saw Benitez about a decade ago. Oh, well, the problem with Benitez, and which Harold alluded us to, was his dad. I mean, you know, his dad was just heavy into
fast
horses.
Women and slow horses, man. He took all his money.
Yeah, that's true.
That's exactly what it was.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, he took all his money, left them broke, and his mother, divorced his wife, left Benitez in charge.
Radio Mia, this guy's hilarious.
No, no, it's true.
It's true.
He left Benitez and a little farmhouse he had in, I forgot the name of the town.
He was into the ponies. He was into gambling like
that. Oh,
please.
Man. Oh, slow horses and fast women. That's all he's doing.
They said Benitez went to the bank one time to get some money, and it wasn't there.
The guy wiped him out.
And he
had to sell Benitez's contract to Jim Jacobs.
Oh, yeah?
Really? Yeah.
He did all that. And the thing is that now he's
got
awarded the state.
He needed money.
Yeah, he's awarded the state because of his boxing championship, and he gets like a boxing welfare, and that's the only thing he has. His mother died, and she made the sister promise to take care of him because he doesn't walk, he doesn't talk, he just stares in space.
How many fights did he have under Jacobs?
When he fought when he was with Jim Jacobs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he was Benitez had about. Oh, he was like about 19 years old, 20-some years old.
He won the junior middleweight with Jacobs, didn't he?
Huh?
He won the junior middleweight title with Jacobs.
No, he won the welterweight championship with Jim Jacobs.
Oh, he didn't win the junior middleweight with Jacobs.
He won it later, but he won when he first got with Jim Jacobs.
Yeah.
He won the welterweight championship. He won it from Palomino.
When he beat Palomino.
Right. That's
okay.
That's what he won from Jim. And then I fought him after. I fought him after that.
Put him in Puerto Rico. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he beat Maurice Hope for the junior middleweight title.
Right.
Maurice Hope. Okay.
Because we had already had the kind. You know, I knew things was going down, and Bob Arum told me before the fact. He said, if you don't knock him out or beat him to death, you ain't gonna win the fight. Because we already had a contract signed for $1 million to fight Ray Leonard, whoever wins.
Okay.
To fight Ray Leonard and everything, so that was the whole scenario. And so Jim Jacobs and them, they weren't gonna let me win no fight. You know what I'm saying? Knowing they had $1 million on the table. So I mean, I knew what the deal was, but I knew I could beat Benitez. But you go with the flow of the situation, and I want the championship fight.
No, but this is something that always fascinates me. You know, me and Doc talking about you a lot and some of those great matchups back then. That you always told us and. You know, basically that, hey, man, you could keep up Ray Leonard's pace, and I think you kind of hinted at how you would have fought him, that if you can keep up Ray's pace and match him, that you can beat him without it being a that long a night.
Yeah, I mean, Ray only had one basic. He had fast hands, and that wasn't going to beat me, you know, because I always fought guys with fast hands all the time, and it didn't bother me. My point is you had to be more slicker. And had some more better moves and some better combinations, and this
different things would be messing with me. You can't do that basic, and think I'm not going to catch you. I'm going to catch you. And that's what I had with Benitez. See, everybody didn't know I could beat Benitez because they didn't know I boxed Benitez when I was young. So I knew what
you
Benitez could do.
There's nothing he could show you. I remember Brian Taylor, Doc Stanley Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Depth, the show. We're talking sports. It is a Sunday night. And it's a sports wrap here with the crew. We're saying happy birthday to Harold Weston Jr. Hello to Debbie, and happy birthday to Stacy tomorrow. Happy anniversary to Uncle Paul and Lily, who I just spoke to down in Virginia. It's also her birthday. And tomorrow is also the birthday of the legendary stickball play with Melly Mays. Bang. Melly Mays, the greatest home run hitter in stickball history. And Bang, one of the clutch players, Billy Bang Bang Davis. And his birthday today, tomorrow, my niece Stacy. You know, the thing, too, Harold, you know, sparring him, I remember when Johnny Roach was traded from the Nets to another team, and they played, and Brian Taylor said, you know, I played with him in practice every day. There's nothing he can show me. And there was nothing Benitez could show you because you had sparred with him, Harold.
Yeah, I sparred with him. And I used to just take him to school when we sparred, so I knew that I can beat Benitez. You know what I'm saying? And there was no thing about it. And the reason why Ray Leonard never fought me, because when I fought one of Angelo Dundee's other fighter, who was like 28-2 at the time, and I beat him so bad. Angelo didn't know my experience. He never really seen me really fight. When I beat the dog-ass kid 10 out of 10 rounds, he just knew when Ray came along later that Ray couldn't beat me. Ray could not beat me the only way they're going to beat me, they're going to rig the fight with the judges. That's the only way they're going to beat me. All right?
Did you
us personally known who won? Oh, we know who won.
Did you fight that Cuban under Angelo Dundee?
I fought a kid named Ralph. What was this kid named? The only person this kid had lost to at the time was Hedgman Lewis. He lost twice to Hedgman Lewis.
No, there was a Cuban under Angelo Dundee that I thought you may have fought. God, I forgot the guy's name. I can see his face now, but I forgot. He came into New York and Stillman's, but he was about that time that you were on top of the game. And I wonder if he fought him, man. But if they see what happens is if they know what you are and what you present as a threat to their boys, they're going to railroad you. They're not going to give you that fight because of the fact that then you're in the driver's seat.
Yeah, the kid's name was Rafael Rodriguez. That's who it was that I fought. Who Angelo Dundee had at the time.
Rafael Rodriguez, man. I wonder if it was the Cuban dude. He had a Cuban dude who became welterweight champ. Was that the guy?
No, not this guy. Not Rafael. No.
Oh, okay. But I'm going back in history. But, I mean, you know, they know they're not going to match him up. This is why we see today the guys fighting this guy and fighting other guys instead of fighting the right guys.
One thing about the guys back in the day, the trainers and managers, what they didn't go, they didn't care about your record. They went by style. What kind of style you had.
Exactly.
If that guy can beat you. And that's how the matchups were made, with style. And that's what made great matches and stuff. But see, today, you know, everybody worrying about record. Records don't mean nothing. It's that style and what kind of personality this guy got. And when can he step to the plate. So that's what was the whole thing. And Angelo knew my style was just not the right style for Ray. Ray can't fight going backwards. And I knew that.
Yeah, he was a one-dimensional fighter, man, even though everybody praised him.
Right.
But he was a one-dimensional fighter.
He was one-dimensional. That's all he was.
Yeah, he had no other alternatives. He fought the same way all of the time. In fact, this is why Benitez was beating him in that fight.
Yes, right.
Benitez was slapping the crap out of him until some right hand dropped him, and then the referee says, no, you're hurt, and he stopped it. And Benitez was
beating him. No. Ray dropped Benitez about the seventh, eighth round.
That's what I'm telling you.
But he didn't stop it then. He stopped the fight with about maybe 20 seconds left in the last round. Ray had Benitez against the ropes, and he came over and stopped
the fight. He wasn't hurt, Doc. Okay, so
I'm not saying he's hurt, but I'm saying they didn't stop the fight when Ray dropped him. They stopped the fight in the final round with about 20 seconds left to go when Ray caught Benitez against the ropes.
Against the ropes. Okay.
And he did that little flurry stuff, and they stopped
the
fight.
And they stopped the fight.
And he should not have stopped it. But he just told him, hey, wait a minute, I'm still here.
Exactly. Right. Not only that, I'm the champ.
Yeah, exactly.
But they had already they already had the bankroll on Ray to win. Yeah. They had the bankroll on Ray to carry the sport. and everything. I mean, he had this beautiful story, the Olympic champion. You know, he married his sweetheart. He took care of his kids. But nobody went in the background and said, well, he was on drugs, he drunk alcohol, he did all. You know, they ain't talk about that. They ain't talk about that later on.
He was drinking then, how?
He started drinking right after.
Yeah, Ray.
Started taking. Hey, that's see people don't understand. That's the reason why I wanted to fight Ray, because I knew that Ray's stomach was not going to be taking them body shots that I was going to throw on his butt.
Exactly.
And the fact is that I don't care how much exercise he did, that cocaine ate up that stomach. You know what I mean? Took
exactly.
Muscles out of it. And
that's
I knew
right.
that was going to happen. Okay,
but he
everybody
was gonna make it to 15 rounds, right, Harold?
Right.
With
you know,
in
everybody
this?
Thought I was jealous of Ray. You know, I wasn't jealous of Ray. I knew I could whip his butt because I knew what he was doing out there in the street. You know what I mean?
When Harold was now the drinking, he was messing with the drugs before the drinking.
No, he was messing with the drugs first.
Really?
With the drugs first. Yeah. He was dealing with the cocaine.
Yeah.
He dealt
with
cocaine.
A party man. Yeah.
He was a party man.
Yeah.
So Harold,
Ray's a squeaky clean kid. Ray is far from squeaky clean.
Right. So Harold, you knew you were just gonna grab it. He was gonna make the 15 rounds, huh?
Right. I knew he was gonna make it because I knew what I was gonna do. I mean, you,
hey, Harold,
see, Ray,
not,
Ray
not,
liked
not,
to just
hey,
take
Harold,
it.
Harold, not to mention you're gonna send a little pre-fight blow over to the dressing room.
Hey
Ray, little something to say hello. Your man Hal Weston.
Oh no.
P.S. Feliz Navidad. My brother. Boy,
that's
it don't get any better than this on a Sunday night.
Oh,
anytime
no.
We got the crew in here. Big C, you still with us? Big C? Big C is running back. You know, his father left last week at Monday to Columbia. Columbia.
That's right.
Yeah, he's in Columbia. So Big C's running. Are you still here, Big C?
Still here.
Yeah, give us a commercial break here. It's 11:45. Give us a commercial break, and we close out these last 15 minutes. Let the bag somebody say, have a birthday to Harold. So everybody sit tight, and don't anybody make a move. And Ray Leonard. This is for you, baby.
I'm gonna sit here, Doc, as I take my blow. Go ahead.
boy, man,
in honor of Howard Weston, I'll take my
go
blow.
Go into commercial now.
broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Well, you know, I remember that great line from Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor says, I don't have a cocaine problem. I just like the way it smells.
Oh, that's cool. I haven't heard that one. I think I keep that line. I'll write it down, man.
Richard, I don't have a cocaine problem. He said, I just like the way it smells.
Yeah.
Oh, Richard was funny. Richard said he snorted so much cocaine he could have brought Columbia up front. You know, just let me have the country. You know what I mean?
No, but you know, I mean, you know, the guys had a weak mind and they fell for the situation. I mean, like they never been in that life before. They did, you know. I don't know. I knew they knew about the drug situation, but I mean, it's stupid to get in something that you know is going to tear your body down and pretty much tear a lot of house, you know, tear families down. But you know, that was the whole thing. I mean, and I knew, you know, it was like my whole thing was there was nobody in the business that I was going to fight that I didn't know what their background was. The most important thing about a fighter or any athlete is knowing what his personal life is really like.
Exactly.
And if you can understand that, you can understand the individual you're fighting. And that's how I conducted myself. That's how I deal with everybody. And one thing about it, I was very disciplined. I was very disciplined and very sincere to the game. See, where nobody else was like that. I mean, so, you know, that I knew that's the come. I always had that little edge over everybody.
Right.
See, that's the big thing. That's the difference, Harold. I mean, if you look into all of the different sports, basketball, you had Len Bias with the cocaine.
Right.
He was drafted by the
instant millionaire.
What was it? The Celtics.
Celtics.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's overwhelming. You have Mark Gastineau. He had the drug problem. Lawrence Taylor, who still, I think, is fighting that drug addiction. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the instant fame or...
Right, but you don't even have to go that far either. See, like, check it out. You got, look at what Kelly Pavlik. You got, you know, your current. You also
Ricky
got Ricky Hatton. I mean, these are all guys that you wonder what happened. I mean, they were top of the game.
Pavlik is supposed to be the alcohol. Hatton is supposed to be. I remember Subia Pedrosa. The way I think it's going now, I can see it's going with Sports and Jeff with the mic on and the lights off. I remember Subia Pedrosa, the great Panamanian featherweight. How good was he, Harold Pedrosa?
Oh, he was great. He was
great.
Yeah.
He had
his own
style, man.
Yeah. He was bad, man.
Let me say his comment. I remember he said, we were someplace. Like, I got a picture of me, him, and his wife. We were at a press conference uptown. He had a Rolex on. Let me wear the show. And I remember he said, that was the problem with boxing. He said, there's too much drugs in boxing. Michael Katz, I remember the two fighters, but he said the only reason why the one fighter beat the other fighter because he was doing less cocaine than the other guy was. and he was talking about the Hagler-Leonard fight.
Well, my whole saying to a doc is this, right? All you got to do is just say no.
It ain't
like somebody putting it in you and forcing you to do it. What it is that a lot of these young men, like the Benitez, the Tom, you know, the Ray Leonard's, all that, they were never popular in their neighborhood or something. So they went to a certain sport. Yeah, and now they're recognized, and now they done looked at the guy. Well, back in the day, you know, the guy was riding around the Cadillacs and all the nice cars and had the women and had the flashy money. And then they finally get to a situation where now they got the money. And so they want to imitate these kind of guys, right?
Yeah, they got the groupies.
Yeah.
They got the homeboys who want to be part of it. Yeah.
And so they go there, so they see the guy. So they seen these guys snorting, and the girls was doing it, so they got involved. So they, after they start making money, they could afford it. They said, well, let me tell you, they ain't going to bother me. And then when they did it, they liked it, and they kept doing it. And that was the whole downfall of them. You know, they got hooked on this situation.
Yeah,
so, you know,
it's what it is. They became the big man on town, and all the groupies and all the homeboys, you know, they want to hang out, they want to play, I'm an athlete, I'm successful.
Exactly. How come you know so much about this?
Oh, because I lived through it, my friend. I saw dudes who were better than me. I saw dudes who could knock you out with just looking at you, man, and blowing it on fast women, the drugs, the booze, never coming to train, and those dudes were better talented than me, and I used to envy these as a man.
My uncle told me a joke one time. He said the grandson says, Grandpa, is it true that if you drink, smoke, chase women, that life seems to be a lot of fun? And he said, no, but it just seems that way, son.
It seems that way. It's right. This is why I'm so down getting out of boxing into baseball. I'm so down on Manny Ramirez, man. That stupid punk blew his whole life, man.
He's really ruining your Sunday, isn't he? He's really
because they're talking about he disqualified
himself. Harold, he's been talking about this since the beginning of the show. You don't understand.
I'm pissed off, man, because... The life of an athlete is the life like of a monk, man. You don't
Rooney, he won't let it go, Rooney.
Why? Because
Let it go.
Yeah, I'm gonna let it go. He had Hall of Fame numbers.
Testy.
And now they're talking about he's not gonna make the Hall of Fame.
Well, he wasn't gonna make the Hall of Fame last year when his name was on that list. He wasn't gonna.
No. Listen.
They're lying.
No, nobody's voting him. They said he had Hall of Fame numbers. You know what I'm saying? Hall of Fame numbers. Okay? And he blew it because of the stupid nonsense.
He wasn't gonna get in, wasn't he? I mean look at Barnes. I mean, Barry Barnes may be proved innocent and he still ain't gonna get into the Hall of Fame.
You don't know whether Manny would have made it. Barnes, I know, was not gonna make it. But you don't know.
No. There was a lot of talk. There was a lot of talk way before this whole thing started. The one thing they said about Barry Bonds, they said the little Barry Bonds was just as good as the big Barry Bonds. And maybe just if you just go off the little Barry Bonds who won three MVPs, that guy could have got in the Hall of Fame. There's still some talk that Barry Bonds still could make the Hall of Fame, as you realize that in supposedly using the thing, it may have been something that he did, but his ability stood out. I mean, he's the one guy whose ability. I mean, I remember the great line that Gary Sheffield said years ago, and he said, you know, nobody's talking about Roger Clemens. Now, how come nobody's talking about Roger Clemens on steroids? Here's a guy in advanced age, winning 20 games, still throwing hard, and then finally this came up. But one of the things that had been duly noted about Barry Bonds is that Barry Bonds was a great player with and, till proven, without steroids. So, I mean, I just think now that they're talking, I'm talking, these guys are talking about, well, you know, they didn't want any of these guys in the Hall of Fame, or they should be put in the Hall of Fame under a different guise or notation. Now, I was always stunned.
Or a so-called asterisk.
But I was always taken back by Hank and his sort of defiance or different demeanor in the Bonds to pass him in the home run thing. I thought, as a black man, I thought as a baseball player, I thought as a friend to Willie Mays, that he should have been there. And in looking back at the shooter's term, that the bullshit that he went through, the 1,000 letters a day of hate mail that he got, that he should have been there for Barry Bonds. You know, until Bonds is proven guilty, he should have been there for Barry Bonds. Okay, I mean, he should have been there. I mean, you know, here was a guy who people said, who's Hank Aaron? Talking about civil rights. Hank said, I've been talking about this for years. Now that I'm chasing Babe Ruth, yeah, and when Hank, if you remember, Dusty, when Hank was at the record, they told you how many more games he played. They told you how many more bats he had.
But you know, Doc, you know what cracks me? I mean, Harold brought up a good point before. You know what cracks me up is it's not until things come to the forefront that people really, really make a big deal about it. I mean, it's not like a lot of people didn't know a lot of this stuff was going on behind closed doors.
It wasn't
until Jose Canseco came forward and said, this has been going on, and people are looking at him like he's crazy. And then finally they did the investigation. You know, you start seeing Rafael Palmeiro, these other guys coming out. I mean, come on. This is something that's been going on for the longest time behind closed doors.
Don't forget Mark McGwire as well.
Exactly. Sammy Sosa, all these things.
The thing that Lady A is alluding us to, and I can see right now we're going to have it, Sports and Death with the lights off and the mics still on. And Harold said, I got to get up early. I'm going to be here for a little while. I guess
I'm
going to
give y'all 15 more minutes, and now I got to go.
Yeah, but Harold said this stuff's been going on. Look what he said. Guys, they knew what was going on with Ray Leonard, but
listen,
you know what?
Listen.
Money is what it's generating.
They don't care. The steroids has been, first of all, two things about steroids. It has been a part of the Latin culture all along. And
number one,
Rooney, our man, Art Rush told us this, 10, 15 years ago about steroids?
That's what he said, Doc. And he jumped all over him about it.
And
he turned out that
it was the
right
pitchers that brought steroids into baseball, not the everyday players. Pitchers were the one that brought steroids into baseball. And there was a story, I remember some guys watching from the bullpen, this guy pitching, they said, okay, it's like that? Okay, so that's how we're going to deal. It was the pitchers that brought steroids into baseball. Art Rush, a decade and a half ago, alerted the world.
That he did.
Rooney said, hey, you know, it's here. Nobody's talking about it, but it was on a down low. Only pitchers did it. But then another guy said, well, if we can help him. Now, there's a great line that Bert Flowers brings to point. He simply says, if everybody is doing it, then who the hell is cheating? It's a great line.
Nobody's cheating because if you look at it, Doc, you have performance-enhancing drugs being used in horse racing. On these horses. I mean, it's just so widespread.
Well, and that's the amazing thing. You're right.
Too bad Benitez ain't bet on none of those horses.
He probably did. The ones that wasn't using it.
The one that was
trying to get off.
Hold on. Listen, we got to hang up. Big C, you got to come in here. We got to close this segment, and then we're going to do, for the next half hour, how's going to be 50 minutes, Sports and Death with the lights off and the mic still on. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death with the Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports and Death with the show. We're going to close it with a prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for another day. Thank you for another great show. Thank you for the family that makes up Sports and Death. Lady A, Little Coco, Harold Weston, Jr., C-Wings, Big C, and the Stadio Baby, Lois. Give us so much, Lord, not what we want, but what we need. Bless our families here and abroad, my family and friends in Brazil. And more importantly, Lord, let us realize that live your life today and stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others is the rent you pay for your space on earth. Forgiveness is not an occasional act, but a permanent state of mind. Unless a man has found something he's willing to die for, life isn't worth living anyway. Larry Hardesty, in Jesus' name, the Lord, amen. Take me away, Larry.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Greatest academic sportscast in the history of radio. Don't nobody hang up, because if you do, we'll lose. You have to get through streaming. It's been 2 hours of Sports in Depth, dedicating the show to Harold Weston Jr. Happy birthday, my Lily and Uncle Paul.
Yay, Harold.
And
happy birthday,
Harold,
again.
Still
moving on.
Debbie out there at the Seashore Restaurant. But right now, for the next 15 minutes or so, we're going to do Sports in Depth with the lights off and the mic on. The talk continues to talk. We just happen to jump on steroids. Manny Ramirez, Lady A, you lead the way.
No, I was just bringing it up because Harold had mentioned about a lot of things going on in the background. I mean, we all know this is something that's been going on, but, you know, everybody turns a blind eye to it because it's about the money, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah,
I mean, listen, after Canseco dropped that book, what year was that? I think it was like maybe, what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, he dropped that book, Juice?
You know, it's the funny thing you talk about Canseco, because when Canseco had his 40-40 year, and this is the amazing thing about the 40-40, because, you know, the steroids is supposed to be a deterrent in speed, and he's the first guy ever to do 40-40, 42 home runs, 40 stolen bases, which Bonds duplicated when he became the first man in the National League to ever do it. But they said, you know, when he came up to Boston that year, because the A's owned Boston for a long time, the crowd was when he came to play, steroids, they were clinging that to him. But it was, like I said, it's amazing the two. I mean, you know what? And what you say here too, Lady A, and Harold and Dusty, is that, you know, come on, the owners knew about this too.
Of course,
everybody.
Oh my God!
Doc,
did you guys read the book? He was talking about these guys were injecting each other.
Exactly.
They were injecting each other in the bathrooms, in the schools.
Well, look at Lyle Alzado, like, of the Raiders.
Yeah.
Every day before a game, he would inject a dose in one of his cheeks.
Are we going to say nobody knew about it? Come on, stop.
Of course.
But you also have to look at the sport of sports entertainment, of wrestling.
Wrestling,
if anyone followed wrestling.
And then let me tell you, see, we knew about that. We knew about that way before the book. Yeah. Way before. Because, you know, the various guys, you know, the wrestlers interact with the baseball players, the football players. You know, we all go watch each other's stuff. And I want you to know that the wrestlers knew about this and used to have a silent chuckle about it way before him take those books.
Right. You know, it did not originate in the Hispanic culture. It originated everywhere, man. The vulnerable, stupid Latinos The stupid Latinos is a man. Hey, you want to make it to the majors? Go ahead.
Mira, you're so stupid, yo mio.
Yeah.
You're so stupid.
The vulnerable, stupid Latinos, man, you want to make it to the majors? You want to go up there? Hey, man, you take this.
What kept you on steroids, Dusty?
Huh?
What kept you on steroids? Nobody would inject you?
No, I would inject myself because I want to be a good left hooker. but the thing is that in the money involved. He, you know, you look. This guy Balco is still in business and he's training ball players. And
He's training boxers too, Harold, right, Harold?
Well, yeah, I heard
he
of that.
He was on the
team
with Nonito Donaire, right? Didn't he say
something?
Right,
Donaire. And he said, let me tell you something, he said, they are enhancing drugs that are undetectable.
Well, for years, they've had masking agents, you know what I mean? They just changed the test, that's all.
Right. He said there are drugs that are undetectable. But they will still be outlawed.
But the fact of the matter is, I got ball players here who are training. There's a guy from Chicago College. Then he got Donito Donaire. He has his own gym where these guys will go to him. But
I know.
Fact of the matter is, the fact of the matter is that this became a scandal, and this is my sincere belief, even though
we don't want beliefs. We want the facts here.
Okay.
We want the facts. Give us the facts.
Well, the facts is, this is my belief, that this
the fact is that Dusty's losing his mind because of Manny Ramirez.
Ramirez, boy.
This became a scandal. This became a scandal when the first dude snitched and started complaining. Just like a dude goes out and robs a bank. And he takes $50,000, gives his partner $10,000. Oh, man, that's not fair. He said, well, I planned the job, so I get more. The dude turns around and squeals on him. That's how they get caught. What happens is the same thing here. Oh, this
okay.
Guy
all right,
this
so let me pose this question.
Hold
up. Let me pose this question to you, Dusty, then. Pacquiao.
Yeah. Yeah.
The rumors of Pacquiao.
Harold, what do you think about that? No, I think that I don't think Pacquiao's taking any drugs or anything like that.
No, he'd be too stupid.
He'll lose everything. And there's a certain ethics of things in life some people don't understand because they lost it somewhere down the road since we were growing up.
Exactly.
Is that there's pride in some people. Okay.
Right.
Absolutely.
And they know that if certain things get out about them or they'll discover anything. They don't want to lose that. They want to be proud. They want their people to be proud of them. So
mm-hmm.
he's never going to do anything wrong to make the Philippine people be ashamed of him of doing anything he do. It's one thing like I always say to everybody in this sport, and they talk about it. I don't care what drugs you have, unless it's Superman drugs. If you can't fight, you can put anything you want. You can't fight
Okay?
Period. Simple as that.
Exactly.
Okay? That's one
exactly.
good thing about this sport. I don't care what you... Now, it might boost you up to a point where you think you're strong like Hercules, but you're really not after you get tired and the guy starts beating on your butt, then you realize it doesn't work.
Right.
Well, my point...
Oh, no, what? You know what? You know, you say, I should have took the other bottle.
Right.
Do you remember that last... I was actually at that heavyweight fight of James Toney and Ruiz.
Right.
And I said something when he got the belt. I don't know if anyone was there, Doc or Harold or Adrian.
Oh, yeah, I was at the fight.
Lady A, I don't know if you were there, but you saw James Toney. He wasn't in that great a shape.
See, the same thing with Mosley was in good shape, but they said that he was on roids too with the whole with the.
Well, he was. He always needed that extra.
But the thing with
they
Harold,
stripped him of the belt.
Yeah, but the sad thing with James Toney was the fact that he had torn his
bicep,
his
tricep,
a heel, an Achilles heel.
Oh, I thought
he had emergency surgery, and the fight was postponed with Ruiz. Now, what happens is that he was given light training, and he was told he was ready to come back and resume the training for the fight. What happened was that the surgeon had given him medication, painkillers, to continue training, but prescribed by the doctor, legal stuff. When he beat Ruiz, well, who doesn't beat Ruiz? I mean, he beat him. When he went and had the exam, at post-fight exam, he tested positive. I said, wait a minute. I didn't take any steroids. I didn't take any human growth hormones. I didn't do anything. I was operated by doctors when I prescribed medication. He appealed. He went to a trial. The doctor was there with the x-rays, the MRIs, and showed what he prescribed, gave him the prescription pad. This is what I prescribed for him so that he can get better and be able to fight. The commission said, you're right. I mean, we understand that he didn't take illegal drugs and everything, but we still strip him because we're not sure that the drugs that you gave him, which were prescription drugs, did not enhance his ability to beat Ruiz, and he still lost the title. That was a stupid decision, and this is what it is.
Little politics going into that.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
What, you know,
politics going on.
Yeah, it was. It's not like it's written in the rules or it's based on the rules that they have and anything. I mean, boxing is like
It depends on who's the promoter or who's the manager.
Absolutely.
And then we'll change the rules, whatever we want to do at that time.
They want us to show force that they're strong and they're clean. So I said, James Toney, I'm sorry, but you still lose. We believe you, but you still lose the title because we're not sure that these drugs did not enhance you. And boom.
Exactly what the fans need to know, like Al was saying. No matter, even you know, it might give you an edge, it might give you a little bit of a power boost. But like Hal said, no matter what sport you're playing, whether it's boxing or you're trying to hit a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, you still have to have the talent.
I mean,
if you don't have the talent, this is my whole
defense for the steroid move with baseball. I mean, steroids. I've always said this about Mark McGwire. I mean, what are you messing with McGwire for? McGwire can hit the ball over any fence. So if he hits it 417 and he takes his stuff and it's 442, he still hit over the 325 side.
Exactly.
This is a guy who hit 49 home runs, the rookie record as a rookie. So what are you messing with McGwire? What are you messing with these guys for? If they're ruining their bodies, that's one thing. But you're being a hypocrite because you had no problem with what they brought to the game. They brought fans in. They brought records in. You had no problem with that. The only person they're hurting in the real deal is themselves. I mean, the old-timers are talking
exactly
about this
what
and that.
I'm
come on, man. It's not enhancing. It's like Harold said, and what he said for boxing goes for baseball.
Right.
If you can't play, if you can't run, you can take anything you want to take.
It
ain't going to enhance
like
it.
Right.
That's like you're an offensive line on a football team. I mean, what difference does it take? Okay, so the guy juiced up to 330. All right, fine. So he takes the juice out, takes the juice away. Now he's only 290. What are you going to do, get less speed up? Or he's wearing 290 now instead of 230?
Yeah. Exactly.
And the thing about it, he may be faster. I liked him better at 330. He was slower. He may be faster at 290.
Yeah.
Sports in Depth on the Blake Griffin Network. I'm also Sports in Depth show. It's Sports in Depth. It's Sports in Depth with the mic on, lights off. Can we get a commercial here, Big C, real quick?
Can we get a who? Sorry?
A commercial.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks. Gang, don't move. We'll be right
walking
back.
In the door.
Okay. And look at the hypocrisy. When Clemens was declared allegations came out, right away, within the first couple of days, there was talk of a pardon. And not only that, his trainer was lying.
Yeah, everybody was lying. Clemens lied. Clemens was the number one liar, and
he's
still lying
his,
in Congress.
His trainer was lying, and Barry Bonds' trainer didn't say a word, and he got
said
locked
what?
Up. Ain't said nothing. He's in jail.
Yeah, but the thing is that you're an athlete. You eat the normal foods and energies. You never know what could happen to your body. You know, but the body begins to slow down after years of plying your trade. I just saw a 60-minute profile on Albert Pujols. Albert Pujols, for 10 years, ladies and gentlemen, has hit 30 or more home runs consistently for 10 years.
For
10
yeah.
years, he has had 100 RBIs or more consistently. You know. There were rumors, he did that because he was on steroids, and he's as clean as a newborn baby. Are we supposed to believe that he's clean? This is what I'm trying to tell you. Yeah, the man did everything that he has to do to get into the major league, I mean, to have that record. Right now he has 400 home runs. He has potential Hall of Fame credentials. But they're talking about, this guy has to be on steroids. That's nonsense.
No.
You know who he's hanging out with right now? Manny Ramirez in DR.
But you know what's so funny? You know what's so funny about sports and people having skills is that sports, you can have a good run for a while, and then all of a sudden you can fall off track.
Absolutely.
And nothing you do can help you. And I mean, it's just the faith of God of saying, okay, you're going to have this run for the next 10 years or the next 5 years. And it's going good, and you think it's all you. But you know what? It's upstairs because, I mean, look at Tiger Woods.
He started like a blazer coming from the amateurs into the.
He ate the golf course.
Oh, golf course. And then all of a sudden now he can't even. He can't win no tournament. He can't even hit the baby tournaments no more.
But Harold, look. A good example, Roy Jones. He hasn't been the same since he got knocked out the first time.
I never had faith in Roy Long, and when he turned pro, I really didn't. I thought Roy was a fast. I really never thought much of Roy. But they built him up like he was great. And I always, me and Doc always talked about, because Doc always loved Roy, and I always say, he's nothing. If he fights somebody that can fight, he's going to get knocked out. He's going to beat. And he
really
did. Yeah, yeah. Me and Doc used to argue about Roy all the time. I told him he couldn't fight at all. I said he's a joke because he's picking his own opponent. See, when I see people picking their own opponents. I'm just going by the fact that you're not great. You're not a world champion, because if you got to pick, then you're not world. You're supposed to just take whoever wants to come.
And I agree with Hal, because Roy Jones fought a police detective.
Right.
Who had a pro record of
Frazier, my boy Frazier from the 2-6.
Exactly.
You know.
My daughter at that time was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. My daughter would have beaten the crap out of that dude. That's how bad this dude. I don't think he lasted one round.
Yeah, that's him.
He was the number one contender for Roy Jones.
Right.
HBO was picking Roy Jones' opponents. That's why he looked so good, man.
Right.
But
right.
Roy
that's
Jones
all it was
not good at all.
He wasn't good at all. He was never good.
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying. You pick and choose, you make him great, but he's not good at all. But the fact of the matter is that when you turn around and you begin to slow down, and this is the basis of what we're talking about, you slow down and you want to compete with the other guys who's hitting 40 home runs, you go out and say, hey, if you take this, man, it makes you better. If you do this, it makes you better. I have a personal little story here. When I was, as an amateur, When I was taking medication and all that, there was a very popular medication, a vitamin pill called Jevro. I don't know if you guys remember that. Jevro.
Yeah, I know.
All of a sudden, one time I started breaking out with rashes and pimples and all over my face, my forehead. My mother, when she rest in peace, took me to Mount Sinai and said, look, my son's breaking out with all these rashes and all that. He did an exam, blood test, the whole nine yards. He said to me, son, are you an athlete? I says, yes, I fight amateur. You know, do you eat your food? Yes, well, I eat my veggies, I eat my corn, my spinaches and all that. To make a long story short, he says, what it is with you, I said, are you taking any vitamins? I says, yes, I'm taking Jevro. It's a full vitamin. I said, what it is with you is that your blood is very rich, super rich. It already has the proteins or whatever the heck it is that your body needs. What you're doing is adding more by taking Jevro. If you stop taking Jevro, your body will be okay. I didn't want to believe him. I thought he was full of it. So I went back home. My bumps cleared. Everything was fine. I said, oh, hell with it. I'm going back to my Jevro. Sure enough, boom. A week later, 2 weeks later, I started breaking out again. My mom says, we got to go back to the doctor. As soon as I walked in, the guy says, you're taking Jevro's again, aren't you? I says, I told you to lay off Jevro because that is too rich for your blood. Your blood is going to react, and this is the reaction. So what I'm saying to you fellas is that the dependency of trying to be better perhaps opened the freaking cage for all these dudes trying to get better and stay at that level because...
It wasn't about staying on the same level. It was about falling away from the crowd. It was about just keeping pace. I don't think it was for some guys.
Keeping pace, then everybody's dirty.
Well, I'm saying, but and then if everybody's dirty, then nobody's cheating.
Well, nobody's cheating according to the norm of the community. But if the guy begins to fall down and Joe Blow here is a natural athlete who's hitting his home runs or knocking people out. And then he says, man, if I can be strong as so-and-so, and so, well, and I know that I can be strong as so-and-so.
Hold on, Dusty, did Steve leave us? We lost Steve? Okay, Steve is
Hello?
Gone. Steve is gone.
I got to go, and thank you for your birthday.
Oh, happy
present.
Birthday, Harold.
Everybody, okay,
happy
Harold,
birthday,
Harold
happy
before
birthday.
You go, before you go, everybody, one, two, three,
happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Harold, who takes no shit and tells it straight like it is. Happy
birthday
to you.
We love you so.
Happy birthday to you.
Okay, y'all take care. Bye-bye.
Later, Harold. Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Good night.
Okay.
For a guy 92, Harold sounds good, don't he?
Yeah.
Stop playing.
For 92, he sounds good because he took steroids. So.
Hey, listen. And I'm not going to say any other things either. Let's say him and Ray Leonard was good buddies at one time.
That's okay. Right. They hang out buddies. They knew where to go to get the blow.
Don't you stop talking about my man Harold like that. You come back and kick all your asses. I don't care how old he is.
No, the thing about Harold.
I run faster on one leg than he can run.
Harold. What leg? You got one kneecap. Harold. Harold always tells it. You love Harold because Harold. You know, and he tells it like it is.
I like him.
And he brings so much insight to what, you know, with him and Dusty. With Dusty with the biological and historical stuff, and Harold with the on-site in-depth as a fighter who was in the business at his highest level, you know, you get an education here by boxing. The thing he talked about Rosario. I mean, and Ray Leonard talked about how he felt he was a hypocrite because he was doing these anti-drug commercials, but he was doing drugs.
He was partying, he was hanging out, he was doing the thing. Because, you see, they get misguided, too, because coke or whatever the heck it was they were doing gives you a false sense of prowess, a false sense of unbeatability. But it's only like at that particular time. But once that garbage wears out, you finish, and your body is a little more destroyed than what it is. And that's exactly what people don't seem to understand. Look at the Klitschko's. Why did they have the USADA in the Olympics? Because the Klitschko's were guilty of taking enhancing drugs to win the Olympic gold medals. I mean, these guys were caught dirty in the Olympics, man. And they were able to wheel themselves out of it. There was a lot of dudes at that time doing enhancing drugs in the Olympics. And basically, this is why they have the USADA. I mean, you don't do this. Unfortunately, look at Marion Jones. Not only her, but she messed up her whole relay team. They all had to get back the medals. So it affects
My cousin was on that relay team. She's from Virginia, and she was one of the members that sued and applied to get her medal back. She says, hey, you know, because she was on it doesn't mean that I have to suffer from it. You know, we won that as a team. You know, she was part of the team. You know, we, to a certain degree, carried her. So I don't see why we have to give back our medals.
Guilty by association, Doc.
But she said that shouldn't be. I mean, because if we were winners by association, why do we have to be guilty by association
because
if you're picking her out?
Broken.
Especially in
because
Wicca,
a rule of the team was broken. That's why.
No, she said. The rule was broken by a team member, not by the team, and the team therefore should not suffer. And
it
she got a medal back.
It's still reflected on the team.
You brought a good point, but she said no. The team didn't break the law. She broke the law, and the team should not lose. She won. She got her medal back.
All right. Well, that was a reconsideration because she pleaded her case.
Her
case, she would not have won.
Oh, no. There's no question about it. But I'm saying her stance was, Marion was part of the team, but she was not the team. The team didn't violate, let's be realistic, we were favored, we were better, and we were going to win anyway.
Well, it's true, and that's understandable, and I'm glad. I didn't know about this appeal, because when this happened, I know all the bold headlines, the whole team was penalized, and they had to give back the gold medal. Now, if she individually fought an appeal, I don't know if the others appealed, well, then that was a good mark. But then they reconsidered. I never read anything about anybody getting back their medals. This is the first time I heard of it.
But really does to you is,
huh?
It speeds up your metabolism. That's why guys are so much stronger, so much more powerful.
Like I said, when I first heard about Marion and the team losing, one of the things that bothered me was my cousin. I said, my cousin's going to lose a medal.
It's understandable.
And going through Jet or Ebony, one of the magazines, I saw the story where
she appealed, and I think she's one of only two, or maybe the only one that did take that stance. And yeah, and they turned around and said, "Hey, you know, you're right," and they gave her a medal back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but this again, you're saying the same thing that James Toney did. He went to a trial, he went to a hearing, and the doctor proved that he was not doing anything illegal. He wasn't cheating.
Lucky for her, like unlike James, there wasn't any politics in it. You know what I mean? Yeah, because in Tony's case, I mean, you know, I remember as a police officer, they we called dereliction. They brought me up for failure to report a crime. And we go down to the trial board and we validate that I could not have failed to report a crime because there was no crime. Okay, fine. Here's still a 2-day suspension anyway. You know what I mean? So the crime was coming down here to see you guys.
Right. That's exactly when they discovered drugs in the firehouses and all that. They had random testing. A lot of my dudes were busted. They tested positive, but they were clean guys. They weren't taking illegal drugs. They were taking medicated drugs prescribed by the medical doctor and the pharmacist. So what happens?
A lot of the times,
right?
Those over-the-counter drugs, or whatever. A lot of the time, man, they'll have stuff that'll make your test.
That'll make your test look like you're a
guilty party. A lot of the time, it'll make you a test and give you like a feeling they want it.
Right.
So that happens a lot when athletes
happened was that we told our guys, because they were suspended without pay and pending dismissal, we told our guys, I was a union delegate, from now on, random test, you contact the doctor who gave you the medication, you bring the prescription, and you bring the medication to the medical office. If you're taking any medication, the guys get injured, they get medication, they go back on duty, but they're still taking medication. And this is how we broke the whole thing, and a lot of my guys got reinstated and clean, and the record's clean, because they were prescribed by the old fire department doctors. Of course, a lot of them were dirty, they were dealing in the firehouses, and these guys, they got rid of them. But the innocent guys who are taking medication,
Dusty, Doc, Lady A, I don't have to tell you, it doesn't even have to be medication. I mean, if you love those delicious poppy seed bagels, it'll do you
good. Yeah, exactly. The poppy seeds and all that garbage. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that as an athlete, like I said before, he's looked at a god, a clean god, a monk who does nothing wrong but perform for the delight of the people. If you're going to turn dirty and get high and blah, and go out there and perform, well then, hey, if they bust you like Manny Ramirez, the
hell? He recovers again. Oh, God.
Yep. Beats the dude.
Listen, you got to get over it, bro.
Angry.
You got to get over Manny Ramirez, bro.
I'm angry because, let me tell you, I've been all my life since I was 10 years of age. I trained Little League junior pony, single A baseball kids. I got them. I was in contact with scouts. I took them to Yankee Stadium for tryouts. I took them to Shea Stadium for tryouts.
Right.
I got them scholarships the whole nine yards. What's his name? Alicea. Juan Alicea, he's still with the Mets. I met him 40 years ago. He says, he asked me, how many kids do you think make it to the major leagues? I said, well, out of 1,000. On a conservative, I figure 300. He says, you're dead wrong. I said, what do you mean dead wrong? He said,
30.
No.
10.
One kid out of 1,000.
Oh, okay,
wow.
I was close.
One kid out of 1,000. There's 999 broken hearts that they've never made it to the major.
That was back in the 20s, baby. That's back in the 20s.
What?
And if you don't think making them pros is super tough, Lady A and C, have you guys been watching the new wrestling thing, Tough Enough with Stone Cold Steve Austin?
No, you mentioned that, right? Last week you mentioned that about it being a one of those series.
I've gone through that Tough Enough training, and it brings back very painful memories.
But
it's a great series. I mean, it really shows.
I saw that MMA with this guy Diaz and Hotley or Whatley. Oh man, what a brutal fight! He knocked him out in the first round, man.
Not for the faint of heart, man. I mean, you step in that ring and lollygagging.
Are you kidding?
If you're some tough guy because you did a little bit of this and a little bit of that, And those guys, and those guys will lay the smackdown on you right quick and send you back home, man.
No, no, these guys are animals, man, and I would never. In fact, I'll carry a big stick and stay away from them because these guys.
The MMA guys, right?
Yeah.
But you know what,
yeah.
Dusty? I'm not feeling that whole, like, grappling thing. It's like, to me, it's like, I don't like that. I like to
what?
Just see people get the crap beat out of them. I don't like standing up toe-to-toe. That grappling thing, that wrestling, I can't get into that.
Well, that's part of the mixed martial arts. You knock a guy down, you can pound him and pound him and pound him and pound him.
Yeah, but it's too much of that hugging and stuff.
And break off his nose and the guy, you know. But anyway.
Yeah, but Lady A doesn't like. See, Lady A is one of those, I like nonstop action.
I like people just
action.
Bleeding,
like
straight up, like toe to toe.
Talking about nonstop action, it's been nonstop for the last 30 minutes. We've got a minute left to go. We're going to have to close.
Left. Oh, I was just going to say goodnight, too, because
I don't want to hear you say another word about Manny. I thought you were going to go into your Manny spiel
no,
again.
I got a doctor's appointment tomorrow, and I'm going to pick up my steroids tomorrow, so that's what it is.
And I want to say that this portion of the show has been dedicated to Manny Ramirez.
Oh, my God.
Manny Ramirez should be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. We're going to let it go. Last thoughts, real quickly, Dusty, last thoughts.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, this has been a beautiful, in-depth conversation. I know I'm angry about a certain subject, which I shall not name. But the fact of the matter is, being an ex-jock and working so hard and clean all my life since I was 10 years of age to see this stupid nonsense and not give a real, honest performance to the public who adores you, and then what example are they going to give the young kids? He has a couple of sons. What example are you going to give us? You know, and he's not the only one. He got the Clemens. He got all these suckers doing this garbage, man.
Calm down. Thank you.
Rooney, last thoughts. Yeah. Good night. Take care.
Don't leave. You have an absolutely awesome panel, and I want to tell the tons and tons of your fans to keep our ratings going through the roof because that's where they were going. Always a pleasure, Doctor.
Hey, you're part of Lady A, the saving the best for last. Last thoughts, sweet one.
I want to give a big holler to Harold for his birthday and just say, you know, we got to look out for our legends. I mean, obviously we lost Gil Clancy last week or this week.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that those are the guys that, you know, set the foundation for what the future holds for us, you know. So we kind of got to give them their props when the time is, you know, when they have their time, you know.
That great line that Susan Mendoza said, one rose in the hand of the living is worth more than countless reefs on a grave. Big C, some thoughts from you real quickly.
So a buddy of mine said, why don't we just put steroids in the Hall of Fame with a syringe and the number one on the back of the jersey? You know, I thought that was funny. I thought I wanted to share that with the panel.
That, without question, is the final word. Big C, let Larry Hardesty say goodnight. Trust in God, gang.
Oh, God in heaven. That was so beautiful. God bless everybody.
Goodnight.
Good night.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Big C, I think we need to let you be the last word from here on in.
Yes, you running things. Nice job, dude.
I just step in when it's necessary.
Well, hey, you know what? Hey. You stepped in, boy. You know, there it is. There's the plaque.
Hey, guys, he put the bow on that, didn't he?
What he did, he got the Easter Bunny hopping, who's going to run right to Papa Noel, if they call Santa Claus.
Rooney, who do you like next week for the Ortiz fight?
You know, ladies, you haven't checked it out. Who's he rumbling against? I'm sorry.
You know, Berto's fighting next week.
I'm going to go. Oh, that's right. Okay, I got it now. I know what you're talking about. I'm going to go with Berto until I see a defeat. So far, he looks real strong. He looks real fast. He looks real strong. He's eager. He's hungry. I'm going to go with him until I see him lose.
Who do you like, Lady A?
You know, I'm not a Victor Ortiz fan. I mean, he turned me off that fight that he gave up in the ring. I was like, I think I'm going to go with, you know.
But,
I want to see Berto do what he has to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I believe he was impressive too, Doc. I want to see him be impressive.
Well, yeah, I believe with a boxing story, funny one. Down at Mickey Mantle's one time, we had the Baron Bleeder. Chuck Webner comes down, lovely wife, and he told his story. I had heard it before, and you know he fought Ali, and they're all in the same complex. So about 2 or 3 days before the fight, he comes and he puts a negligee on the bed. And he tells his wife, "You're going to be wearing this when you're sleeping with the heavyweight champion of the world." Well, we know what happened. Chuck loses the fight. The night of the fight, they come back into the hotel suite, and, you know, Chuck is sitting there soaking his hands and stuff. So about 15 minutes, because they're all in the complex, Ali's suite is, like, maybe down in the bottom hill. So Chuck's wife turns to him and says, "Honey, is he coming up here or I'm going down there?"
Hey, Doc, this is where you go. Lady A, you know Chuck Webner's claim to wrestling fame, don't you?
What's that?
He once got thrown at Shea Stadium. I was there live. He once had a mixed boxing match, wrestling boxing, against the late, great Andre of the Giant.
And what happened?
Really?
All 7 foot 5, 525 pounds of him.
And what happened?
He got thrown. They had the ring. I'll never forget it, Doc. They had the ring in the bright Shea Stadium lights at night. On the pitcher's mound of Shea Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Andre picks this guy up and throws him towards the second base, the fraction of the mound. Super strong.
He threw him to second base?
What was that, Doc?
He threw him to second base, huh? He doubled him.
Yeah, so you know what happened was Andre tried to hold him, and Andre tried to get his hands on him, and Chuck hit him with like 6 or 7 really nice shots.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'll say about Chuck, he wasn't known as a great boxer, but he must hit pretty hard on Andre basketball. So he tries this 2 or 3 times, and I just wanted to get Andre and said, "Yo, just screw that. I'm going to have to just pick this guy up and throw him." So that's what they did. So Andre just picks this guy up by the collar and literally throws him from basically the pitcher's mound up towards the second base line.
Oh, my God.
So his manager gets picked off at the rough treatment of Chuck, and they come storming back in the ring with Chuck Webner, his manager, and what have you. So the late, great Gorilla Monsoon, who said this injustice, comes back in with Andre and a huge Malay form. It was really great stuff. Crowd goes wild.
I can see the glow. Big C, last thoughts one more time.
Steroids, number one. No, I'm kidding. I'm going for Manny next week. All right, that's fine.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.